Welcome to Comadres y Comics.
Hello, everybody. This is episode 11. How are you guys doing?
Yay, episode 11.
Woo! I can't believe we've been gone on so long.
Yeah, I know, huh? Pretty good. So, what's in Chisme de la Semana, girls? Let's get right into it.
Chisme de la Semana. Okay, so, I have some chisme. My chisme is that DC is going to be having a Wonder Woman Day.
What?
Oh, that's
so
right.
Some of you might remember that, I don't know when Batman Day started, but every year Batman has a Batman Day. I think
sometime in May or June.
I was going to say, it's summer or spring month, but this year in celebration not only of Wonder Woman movie coming out, but also Wonder Woman's 75th anniversary of just being in existence, DC is sponsoring a Wonder Woman Day, and they have announced it on Diamond, our comic distributor, announced that it's coming. It's going to be June 6th, which is a Saturday. So keep your eye out for events happening at your LCS. They have specials going on with trade paperbacks. There's going to be some cool, like, arts and crafty things that they are offering for the LCSs. And one step further, Heidi Ho Comics in Santa Monica, we're going to have something June 6th, but also on May 31st, we are going to have a Wonder Woman movie premiere party.
Woo!
So you're hearing it here first. We're going to have a premiere party. It's a Wednesday, so it is a school night. but maybe you guys can stop by while you're picking up your comic books. You're going to be there anyway. And it's going to be co-sponsored by Geek Chic, which is a promotion company that does events like Long Beach Comic Con and I think Long Beach Comic Expo. Mm-hmm. I can't remember which one it is. I'm sorry for that mix-up. It's one of those. But they do a lot of that kind of geeky promotion. They sponsored a New Year's Eve Villains Day party.
I heard about that.
Yeah.
Was that cool?
Mm-hmm. It was fun. It was a lot of fun. It was at a local bar in Santa Monica for New Year's Eve, and everyone dressed up as their favorite villain. So they're co-sponsoring it, and it's going to be held at Heidi Ho. So everyone can stop by Heidi Ho on May 31st. We'll probably have more details as the date gets closer up on our Facebook page, but that is truly some chisme because this is the first that we're talking about it here on Comadres y Comics.
You heard it here first, guys.
You heard it here first because even I didn't know.
Nice.
So May 31st is the Heidi Ho Comics event to do the movie premiere?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then the June 6th is Wonder Woman Day.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Excellent. I just wanted to make
sure. So no matter where you are, even if you can't make it to your LCS, I want to see you sporting your Wonder Woman t-shirts and shoes and whatever other kind of Wonder Woman stuff that you have in support of her 75 years in existence.
Hey.
Excellent, guys. That's so cool.
So what kind of chisme do you guys have?
My chisme de la semana pertains to the upcoming Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
Excellent.
Well, more about the director. So it is official that there is going to be a third Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
Ooh.
And it will be directed by the man himself, James Gunn, once more.
Okay.
Now, the deets about this are that this is going to be his last helm on this and his last interpretation of the Guardians of the Galaxy, and it will be taking place post Infinity War. The other details is that this is going to be the last, that third movie is going to be the last interpretation of the current team that we might have now. So what this means is that either one, the team is going to be breaking up into different, they're going to be doing their own thing, or we're going to get a new movie, or it could be that this is going to be the last movie. But seeing as that they've been so successful,
yeah,
and I'm pretty sure that they're just going to make a different team. maybe the original team. But I'm excited for it, even though I haven't, the second movie hasn't even dropped yet.
Yeah. When does the second movie drop?
May 5th.
May 5th.
It's so, coming soon.
Yep.
It's the weekend of Free Comic Book Day.
Mm-hmm.
So, Free Comic Book Day, also another time that you need to get your little comic-loving booties down to your local comic book shop, because there's going to be, at the very least, free comic books.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yes.
And the cool thing is that Heidi Ho is also doing Free Comic Book Day, but they're also doing Comic-Con kind of setup where they're going to have artists, vendors, also
publishers,
Aftershop Comics. I believe Monkey Monster cosplayers are going to be there.
Yeah, Han Solo will be there.
Han Solo will be there.
And unfortunately, Arturito and
Princess Loca
will not be able to make it, but Han Solo will be there.
Nice. Also, I don't know if you guys have heard, but Comadres y Comics are going to be there.
Yeah!
So you guys, if you guys want to hang out, maybe, I don't know, do a little interview. There's going to be giveaways. We're going to do a raffle. There's going to be a raffle at the store as well. There's going to be sales.
Cosplay contest.
No way!
Yes!
No.
Cosplay contest.
Can I enter even though I'm part of it?
Definitely. We encourage it.
And the first prize is going to be a $100 gift certificate to Heidi Ho Comics.
Oh.
In addition, Geek Chic, who is also co-sponsoring our Free Comic Book Day Heidi Ho Comic Con, is going to provide two tickets to Long Beach Comic Expo.
Nice. Oh, nice.
Yeah, so there'll be both adults and children's
cosplay
contest.
Oh, wow. So there's two. Oh, that's so cool.
Unfortunately, only the $100/ comic tickets will be for the adults, not the kids. The kids will have some fun stuff, though, too.
Yeah, of course. So a lot of stuff happening in May, guys. A lot of stuff.
Lots of stuff.
And what about your chisme?
Oh, my chisme. Well, let me tell you guys. Preacher is on Hulu, and I just binged it.
Oh,
it was complete. I really am loving it. I love it, love it, love it. I really like Tulip. She really steals it for me.
God, yeah.
She's such a great actress. I'm really loving it. I skimmed through the Preacher series. I really didn't.
I was just going to ask you.
Yeah, I read like a trade like in the middle of the whole series.
Oh, okay.
So now I went and got it all on Comixology.
Okay.
Like, because they had the sale going because the Preacher came out.
Uh-huh.
So I bought it like an obscenely low price. So I'm like, okay, now. And I have to hide the purchase from my husband as well. Because he'll be like, what do you mean you spent this much on comic books again?
Again.
So I'm excited about starting to read it from the beginning, so it's really exciting. And if you guys haven't seen it, I really highly recommend it. It's on Hulu right now, the first season, and I'm not sure if they're going to follow it with the second season, but as of right now, first season totally rocks.
Yeah, I actually read Preacher way back in the beginning of my comic book reading career, and before I started working at comic book shops. This was quite some time ago, after I was looking for something to read, after I had caught up on Walking Dead to the single issues, and Preacher was something that was recommended to me. And I remember reading the first trade and just being like, what the heck am I reading? But I had to keep going, and I mean, it really, the characters really endeared themselves to me, and by the end, I was crying over some of the things that happened to the characters. So, I really, really enjoy Garth Ennis a lot.
Yeah.
If you are a Garth Ennis fan and you have not read A Train Called Love, which was his short series, I don't know how many issues it was. I
think it
was
12.
12?
Yeah.
It came out beginning last year and then went into the beginning of 2017 and ended. But it's so fun, and I laughed out loud at almost every single issue. And it's not necessarily a comedy, but it's funny. I mean, just a short description. It's kind of like a group of mismatched friends hanging out, and there's assassins, and there's drug dealers, and there's horse porn.
I did not see that coming.
Hey, look, for a man who wrote a book called Dicks, I believe it. I believe it.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so definitely check it out. I really, really like it a lot.
Yeah, and I just feel like one of the things that I really loved was the scene with God. Mm-hmm. I didn't think they were going to pull it off in the show, but uh-huh. They totally did. So it's got my attention for sure.
I've only watched the first two episodes. Mm-hmm. I got behind on AMC, and so now that it's on Hulu, I definitely will be all about being able to binge it.
Same here. Definitely. I almost finished it. As everyone knows now, I have a problem with finishing stuff, but it's back on Hulu, and I steal my friend's Hulu all the time, so I'm probably going to finally finish it.
Nice.
I did like it. I did like it a lot.
Yeah, I did too. A lot of people were definitely, who had read the comic, were a little bit apprehensive about it because, I mean, it's a really fantastical story.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think a lot of people were worried about how that would translate to the small screen. But what I saw, I really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, once I saw that scene with, you know, particularly with God, I was like, oh, my God, they really pulled it off. They pulled it off.
Well, that makes me interested to go back and watch.
And Damian Cooper, he's an extraordinary actor. He plays Tony Stark's dad in some of the movies.
Oh, okay.
He also played, I think, the Devil's...
That's where I'd seen him. Oh, my God.
The Devil's double, the Devil's twin, the Devil... I don't know, but that was a good movie. Yeah, it was a really great movie, guys. Just Google it. That's what Google's for. But, yeah, I really highly recommend it. So, man, if you're on the fence about reading Preacher, maybe check out the show and then be inspired to read the comic book.
Yes, for
Just
sure.
Just do it for Cassidy.
Do it for Cassidy. Oh, my God, yes.
He's my fave.
Yeah, mine too.
He's so hot in the show, too. The way he talks, I'm just like, keep talking. I don't understand a word you're saying, but damn.
You know, there were actually a couple of actors who didn't get the part, but who came in when they were searching for Cassidy, who came in and bought some Preacher books, and told me that was the role that they were
really
trying out for, yeah. Nice. So I remember when they were doing the casting for the show.
Oh, wow.
We get a lot of actors that come in looking at source material.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, I really...
I'm never there. I might be there, but I just don't recognize them.
For me, it's always like, you look familiar, but I can't put my finger on it.
Well, usually these are people who they're just vying for the role, so they haven't actually gotten it yet, so they're not really big and famous yet. I always tell them, make sure that when the show takes off that you give a shout out to Heidi O.
That's a good one. I like that. Definitely. That's so cool. So that was El Chisme de la Semana, guys. And I'm gonna glaze through this beer because we actually got it's called Rodenbach, and it's brewed in Belgium. It's aged in oak vats, and it's an ale matured for 2 years, and we totally hated it. Okay, so what is...
I just tried it again. Yeah, it's still bad.
It's still bad, isn't it?
It's still bad.
It says that it's a mixed fermentation ale. Like you said, it's matured in oak vats, and it says that gives it a signature sweet, sour taste and complex bouquet akin to fine wines.
Well,
this fine wine is like the wine that I used to buy at Big Lots when I was in college.
Oh,
damage.
Like, you know what? I never thought we'd get into the point of this show where we would rate something all the same and all low scores.
Right,
so
yeah.
We all went for the initial rating.
Yeah. Initial. Just a reminder, our beer rating is initial. Mm-hmm. At the bottom, partial, in the middle, full for
pretty good, decent
and
beer.
Then rigid at the very top, and then, oh my gosh, I can't control myself, Super Saiyan
yeah.
at yes. the top. Mm-hmm. Okay, so initial is the bottom one here. I even making up a new category. This beer is flaccid.
You know what? That makes sense. I'm gonna put it down there. Flaccid.
Yeah. There you go.
And you know, not to knock this brewery by any means, but I think maybe this was a bad batch or something. Yes. But to me, honestly, this comes close to, again, this is called Rodenbach, and this, to me, tastes like pulque. Like warm pulque from the town in Mexico, like where, you know, you can go, you can only get to a place in a donkey.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, like maybe it's our palates are not... My palate isn't sophisticated enough to appreciate this.
Sophisticated my ass.
And it's definitely, like it said, sweet, sour. I am not a fan of sours. There are people out there who champion sours upward and downward and all over the place, and I just don't appreciate them. Again, like Sarah said, maybe my palate is not sophisticated enough, but I want a good, nice, hoppy, fizzy feel in my mouth, and this just definitely was not it.
Yeah, there wasn't enough carbonation, so I don't know if that's part of the brew of this brew. But I actually had my brother taste it, who also is like a real big beer connoisseur. But he said, no, there's something wrong with this, or it's just not our style at all.
Mm-hmm. So we don't know enough for it to actually be able to say that it was a bad batch or if it was just not to our liking. But all we know is we no likey.
Eventually, we're going to look it up on Beer Advocate, but as of right now, it's not very good.
It tastes like week-old lemonade left out in, like, not in the fridge, but, like, out on the table, and it doesn't have enough sugar in it.
Like, right?
It tastes like a whiskey sour without the benefit of whiskey. It tastes like I am sucking on a lemon, but I don't have the benefit of salt or, like, anything, so it's just like, nah.
So I would definitely like to hear, though, for some listeners who maybe this is a beer that they like or they have experience with it, and even if they tell us, you guys are crazy, this is like the best sweet sour beer there is out there, I'd definitely be interested in hearing another take on this. But, yeah, for me, I give it a sad little flaccid.
You know,
it's always sad when it's flaccid.
You know, we're giving it a flaccid, but Beer Advocate says it's 98. The score is 98. Maybe it was a bad batch. I don't know. I would be willing to give it another try if I was, you know.
You know what you need to do? Like, the guy who sold it to you, like, just be like, this, what was this? What did you give me? How could you betray me like this?
Right?
just take one of these cups to him and just like, is this what I was supposed to drink? Maybe he'll give you a free one.
Maybe. I would only try it if it were free and, you know, it didn't taste like.
Because it does happen with wines. I've had wines before that have turned.
Oh, absolutely,
and,
yeah.
And with that, it's a little bit more apparent because the vinegar taste comes off right away, and so you know it's not good. But, with this beer, it just did, something just did not taste right.
Exactly. I completely agree. So we're going flaccid all across the board?
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, so sad.
That was very appropriate. <Yeah.
laughs> So, guys, just to let you know, if you guys haven't seen Iron Fist, which I doubt you haven't because it's been out for
a
while
now.
It's
been out,
yes. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of reviews and critiques on the internet, especially on Facebook.
All those Facebook critiquers have been down Iron Fist's throat since it even before it came out.
So it's going to be spoiled, definitely spoiled right now. So we're going to go into a small Iron Fist review because we finished it, except for Jen.
But I already know how it ends. I live in a household with two younger brothers and a sister. Well, the sister's not into comics as much, but my brother's, yes. So inevitably, my little brother just binge-watched it, and he loves spoiling stuff, so he spoiled it for me, and I'm just like, well, I'm still going to watch it. And I'm almost finished.
Almost.
But I know what happens. I know what's the deal. But either way, to the review, all the critiques are valid. That is like, okay, I'll give it this. It was it was entertaining. In I have nothing to watch, so let's just watch this.
Mm-hmm.
It is hands down the worst of the Netflix ones. Like, it's Netflix itself, the Netflix Marvel series itself are on another level that is absolutely amazing.
Yes.
So it's okay to watch. Like, it's better than a lot of stuff out there, but it's still, like, when you compare it to Daredevil season 1 and 2, to Jessica Jones, to Luke Cage, it is, it's watered down and it's so slow. Like I said before, it didn't redeem anything. It didn't redeem itself from anything because it's new, like Daredevil did. And it's not as action-packed and as, like, entertaining and visually stunning to watch as with both Daredevils. It didn't do anything revolutionary like it did with Jessica Jones.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And it wasn't, like, politically savvy and awesome music and so full of culture.
Oh, that
and,
music.
You know,
I know,
culture,
right?
That Luke Cage was. Like, like our first episode, we were all raving about Luke Cage.
Oh,
and just how
so
amazing
excited.
It was.
Yes.
And how we connected
with
it. We
understood.
And how we connected with it. I honestly believe Luke Cage is their best one.
Mm-hmm.
But Iron Fist, like, it was fun to watch, and it was interesting, the corporate espionage and everything, and how that happened.
And how that works out.
And there was definitely some emotional moments in it, and I did like the whole, like, PTSD thing as well, but it was very, very slow, and it wasn't as action-packed, and it was like...
As it should have been, I think.
Yeah, because
from the title,
Iron Fist, like, I don't care if this dude just punches a wall, like, just punch a wall, man, like, I didn't, like... Like, you see that, but not until, like, the third or fourth episode.
Right, yeah.
And it's just, like, it's, like, really, like, and he just punches, like a metal door to get out of the mental hospital. But you know what? I saw Luke Cage get shot out in, like, within the first issue, like the first episode. Mm-hmm. So you know what? And they bounced off his skin. Like, that's like, I had to wait 3 episodes. Come on. Like,
yeah. And then when we saw even like a real use of his like chi and the Iron Fist,
mm-hmm.
was when he punched the floor and he kind of made everything. Kind of like an earthquake,
mm-hmm.
and it broke windows, it, you know, broke pictures and everything. But we saw that towards the end of the freaking series. It was like the second to the last episode,
mm-hmm.
and I'm like, why couldn't? I don't know. For me, like, if I know I have a power, I'm gonna be like testing the fuck out of it. Okay, I gotta know how far it can go. It's gonna be like Professor X and the X-Men. We're mm-hmm. gonna go freaking into the danger room and we're gonna freaking go out. You know, like, I wanna know how far it can go. You know?
I wanna know how my powers affect this environment that I'm in.
Right. And apparently, after he got the Iron Fist, he actually left...
Kunlun.
Yeah.
So he didn't even stay to, like, train or anything.
Right.
Yeah. Like, and another thing that I didn't like is that the Bride of 9 Spiders.
Yeah.
They never said it, but I'm going to assume that's who they were trying to go with.
Yes.
And that... I'm going to be real. That kind of pissed me off because that means that they're not going to go with Matt Fraction's version of Iron Fist, which honestly was not only most of what I've read of Iron Fist, but the most entertaining and interesting parts of it because of the world building and the fantastical aspect to it. I love that. Yeah. I love that mythos and everything. And to make the Bride of 9 Spiders a bad guy, like, I mean, objectively, she wasn't good in the other one, but we didn't know enough about her.
Yeah.
She was an immortal weapon, and now she's been downgraded to, like, second-rate villain? Like, come on, like, you could have done better than that. You could have given me all the immortal weapons and the different immortal, like, the different cities besides Kunlun, but instead you gave me corporate espionage and stuff.
That part of the TV series was actually both my favorite and the biggest letdown of the series, because that was, like you're saying, Jen, my favorite part of the Matt Fraction Immortal Iron Fist 12-issue run that I read, mm-hmm. my favorite part was learning all about the other Iron Fists and when he had to do the go through the challenges mm-hmm. of all the other Iron Fists that came before him, or I don't actually remember now what it was, but he had to go through a challenge to become Iron Fist, and right. He had to go through all these people who had all these powers, and mm-hmm. I actually recognized those as he was going through, mm-hmm. and it kind of seemed to me like it was such a downplay of what that was in the story in mm-hmm. the book, because to me it was kind of like he just went through like this little maze at a carnival and there was like somebody at around every corner in right. this mm-hmm. warehouse, but like in the book it was just so like fantastical, and it was like this huge like arena thing
it was very
ceremonious for uh-huh. the Iron Fist to go through this, that right. every Iron Fist before him had to do the same.
Yeah.
So I was super excited because I actually recognized the characters in the Bride of Nine Spiders.
Davos.
Yeah, it was really interesting to me, but I also thought that it was like such a small little shout out to something that I felt was like super important to the mythos of Iron Fist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. What I felt was lacking, like we were saying, like the action aspect of it. I just felt that it's Iron Fist. We should see more action scenes. Mm-hmm. We should see him. I mean, he trained after his plane crash, which was what, at 13, 14, like 12, 12, 10, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I think,
after,
yeah.
After that.
11, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, and then for him to be so, like, not, I don't know, it didn't seem like he was, like, confident in his martial arts training. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like maybe he didn't want to show off, I guess, whatever, but at the same time, it's like he had been training in that forever. Like, that's all he did. Mm-hmm. He didn't go to school. He didn't have playtime. He just trained. Mm-hmm. And for them to not really highlight that in this storyline in the show, it was really disappointing.
I saw more Kung Fu in Daredevil than I saw in Iron Fist. And like, come on, like, what's
that,
like,
that's actually one of the memes I saw was, how come Daredevil can fight better than Iron Fist and Daredevil's blind? seriously, like, but it's true, and like I believe you were telling us, Jen, about the guy who did the martial arts training for the Daredevil show.
Mm-hmm. You were, that wasn't me. That was you.
No, it was me.
Sorry, never mind. It was Kristen.
Yeah, well, we have an insider who comes into the shop at Heidi Ho. He was a writer for Daredevil, actually. And he came into the shop, and he was just talking about how the guy who did the martial art fight scenes for both Daredevils, they really wanted him for Iron Fist. But it was just a lot for him, and he was burnt out, and he decided that he just could not put himself through going through a whole nother Netflix series of just, I guess, I mean, the schedule must be super rigorous, to get it out there, and so he passed on it, and so they had to find somebody else, and so that's why you see such a difference in quality of the fight scenes, because it's just a different person who choreographed them.
But mm-hmm. this is what made Daredevil totally revolutionary, was the fight scenes, mm-hmm. those closed mm-hmm. closed quarter fight scenes, especially down the stairwell one.
Yeah,
the elevator one.
Yes. I remember when, like, people were absolutely raving about that, and how just the brutality of fighting, and how, like,
it
you
was
can see
so
he's exhausted.
Technical
oh,
and so amazing.
It was absolutely amazing.
It was art. It was art. It was brilliant. And then we get, mm-hmm. you know, Iron Fist, who has been training forever. Mm-hmm. Not like Daredevil, but this guy has been training forever since a kid, and, you know, it's really watered down, like super watered down. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to defend it, but I mean, it is a fact that the actor was saying that they only had 2 weeks mm-hmm. To train on some of the mm-hmm. Fighting sequences, and then they filmed.
Yeah, I read some of that. I read an interview from the actor who plays Danny Rand, who said that some of the scenes he was literally just being blocked through the scene that day, and that a lot of it he was kind of just like, it was like by the seat of his pants, he was just kind of like making it up.
If that's the case, he did a great job. But you know, I think they should have tried a little harder. Maybe the production, maybe the scheduling was off. Maybe they should have waited for the Daredevil choreographer fight scene guy to be available. Or maybe they wanted to push the Defenders.
I was just going to say, there's definitely a timeline, and I feel like that's one of the biggest critiques that I've heard, is that it feels like this Iron Fist was rushed.
Because of the fact
that they needed a Danny, they needed everyone to be introduced to the last member of the Defenders.
Which is
what everyone is really looking forward to coming out. Mm-hmm. And so I think that there's definitely no way that they could have waited because they needed this to be made.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I get out of a positive note out of this is like we see more of Madame Gao. She's really, really badass.
Yeah, I've liked her
since Daredevil.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that she was just a bigger fish out there that we didn't know anything about. Mm-hmm. So this really developed Madame Gao as a character in the Iron Fist series.
Mm-hmm.
What else am I trying to search for? I mean,
there were some positive things. I did like Colleen. I like Colleen.
Oh, she's great. She was her scenes were amazing. Her sword play.
You guys, I'm hella gay. I had that clear revelation. I was just like,
her sword play. those
sword fights. Her fighting scenes was more
fighting. Yeah, those fighting scenes in the ring. Oh my god.
Oh yes.
Oh my god.
Those were fucking brutal. And I'm like, damn. Because when I saw her fight, because she started. Off the fight scenes in the series, and I was like, this is what it's going to be like. I'm in for a dream. I'm in it. And then flat.
And then I really enjoyed that part of her character development of her, like, just the struggles that she was having and having and going doing those cage fights. That was really one of my favorite parts of her development and just the story development overall, too.
I really loved her as a character, her being lied to as far as what the foot was really about, all that stuff. I just, I felt that was a good story that they told, that I really liked that. I really liked the drunken master guy, but I think he also trained for Danny Rand, but they didn't pick him. I think
they said.
I think they had said that he was too Asian for the part.
I think so. Is he the drunken guy that's in front of the door? And did you just say foot instead of hand?
Did I do that? Oh, my God.
I was just like, wait, did she mean the hand? I was like, is she confusing TMNT?
Yeah, I'm totally confusing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I did that all while watching the series. I'm like, the foot. It's the hand.
Well, TMNT is supposed to be a spoof off of Daredevil.
Because Daredevil has stick and... the Ninja Turtles have
splinters.
Yeah. Oh, alright. And then, Daredevil has hand, and the Ninja Turtles have the foot. And there's a lot of other parallels, too, that somebody had pointed out to me before, but those are kind of the biggest ones.
Yeah. Every time I could never wrap my head around hand because I grew up watching the Ninja Turtles, so I was like, oh, it's foot. It's an extremity, guys. It's an extremity. But that was disappointing.
And in season 3, we get introduced to the penis. It's an extremity, guys.
Crazy.
I mean, if we're going with the theme here about body parts, might as well.
What else did you guys feel was interesting? We were saying that we liked the father. What was his name?
Harold
was mean.
Yeah.
I liked him.
He was mean. He was a dick, but man, he was kind of hardcore.
Yeah.
Like, this dude, like, straight up, like, killed, like, people. He was just like, man, I want to live. Like, straight up, like, Harold was a savage.
Yeah.
He was a straight up savage.
Yeah, and you know one of the things that he couldn't even get out of his apartment his penthouse.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But still, he, like, just was like, I'm not going to die. Like, for me, if I was pinned up in my, you know, in one room or one house for 10 years, I'd be like, just kill me. Just kill me, guys. I'm done.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think I can. I could adjust. Just keep my Netflix and Hulu up to date, and I'm good.
Like everything about it, like that one scene when he's talking to his assistant and stuff, he's like, you know what my father used to do? He's like, he used to, like, whip me with his belt until I didn't apologize anymore.
Yeah.
And then
that was so cool.
That was like oh yeah, that's God. Child abuse, and, like, that's horrible. And it's horrible, but, like, the way he's saying, and then he, like, rolls up his belt, and he's just like, man, I miss him every day. Oh my God.
I know. Actually, him talking, that, especially that moment where he was talking in that scene, mm-hmm. I was like, I do apologize too much.
Yeah, because he did have a point. Like, I was just like, God damn, I do that. He was correct about that, and I was just like, God damn. Like, he was just straight up hardcore, and, like, I understand why Ward is messed up and everything because of his father and how the treatment itself is, like, absolutely horrible, but he was a coward. I didn't like him.
I liked Ward for that reason. He was so damaged. I loved it. Loved him breaking out in a sweat. I loved his disheveled hair. I loved it when he was, like, trying to compose himself in his, like, nice suit and tie, and then all of a sudden it was just too much. Yeah. I just love that.
I feel like out of all the characters, he definitely had a trajectory of redemption for me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. He was, yeah, definitely. And Joy, of course, we all know that she's probably gonna come back of some kind of, some villain of some sort. Which I feel like that wasn't really explored because she was so, like, out of the whole real story.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you see her with that other dude and she's like, well, yeah, what was his name? Davos. Yeah, she was like, tell me more about this, Danny. His training, like, they're like, yeah, he's, you know, and that's one of the things I hate, like, when they just kind of, like, play it off, like, yeah, it's all his fault, yeah, you know, like, no, that's so easy, don't go there, like, I don't know, make it more complicated,
more
than just, like, I'm jealous of you, you know, like, what?
Well, not even that, because Davos, they did make the thing more interesting, in the comic book, yes. Davos is actually Danny's father's rival.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And he was, like, they had been best friends, and then Davos felt resentment towards Danny's dad, Wendell, because he was the foreigner, and somehow he beat him to become the person who would face the dragon. Forget the dragon's name.
No, I don't remember.
Yeah. But
he was the one that was chosen over Davos.
Yeah, well, not chosen. He won their, like, tournament fight. The right to face the dragon.
Yeah.
And he lost. And, like, so in the comic books, again, the relationship is a little bit more complex. But in Matt Fraction's run, Davos is so interesting. And he's, like, and it's, like, it's a,
yeah.
about more his relationship with his father, the Thunder.
Mm-hmm.
Do they say that in the TV show?
I don't believe so.
Well, comic book spoiler. Davos' dad is the Thunder, the guy who trained Danny.
What?
Yeah. So it's just like it was. The comic book was more interesting than the TV series. But the funny thing is that I think they made Colleen more interesting in the TV series.
Yes, for
than
sure.
In the comic books.
Yes,
yeah.
I agree.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. She had a very small part.
Very small.
In the book. Because I just remember there was a section that, maybe it was like one or two issues, and there was just this woman who was fighting with Danny
Heart,
and with,
Misty
Knight.
Oh, yeah.
And they never said who she was, and then all of a sudden they came out with Colleen. I'm like, wait, who's this? And so and they didn't really put much attention to her, and she didn't really show up again very much in the rest of the book.
Mm.
And I had to do some research to figure out who she was, and then when the TV show came out, I definitely was aware of who she was, but definitely didn't have as much of a badass picture of who she was from the book, like I did. And I have to say, I am 150,000% on board with a Daughters of the Dragon TV show.
That would be super cool.
Oh, my God. Please. they should have done that instead of,
I would like to address one of the things that I'm getting a lot of interesting responses on is Claire being the one singular character that ties all these series together.
She's the night nurse. I don't care what Doctor Strange has to say. I mean, although in the comic books there's like 3-4 night nurses.
Yes, there's a whole bunch.
There's a whole bunch of them. Mm-hmm. But like, officially speaking, Claire is my night nurse.
Yeah, a lot of I got a lot of response where a lot of them are just kind of tired of her being like putting her nose where it's not wanted, and I'm like, how can you say that? She's actually.
But how is it not wanted? She's needed.
Yeah.
That's what I said. I'm like, maybe it's not to tie the series, it's to get the series together. You're going like far above the actual meaning of her character. She's. Mm-hmm. A nurse, and people need her healing powers.
Yeah.
She's a healer.
Because these are all, while these are all quote-unquote superheroes, they are not...
they're not invulnerable.
Yeah, I mean...
In the same way. Well, I mean...
Luke Cage is.
Yeah.
But there was...
but in Jessica Jones, they still needed her for stuff like that. And it's just, Claire is what's going to bring the Defenders together. I'm very positive about this, that she's the one. And honestly, like, I have seen, like, why are we getting these complaints about her and not about Coulson?
My God, yes.
Like,
right?
why is that?
Why is Coulson still alive? Like, didn't he die in the movie?
Yeah. Why is everybody complaining about Rosario Dawson, the night nurse, who they objectively has more to put in than what all the, I don't know how many minutes he was in all the movies before they came out with Avengers for Agent Coulson. Like, I like the dude too. I like Clark Gregg.
He's a good character, yeah.
Yeah, he's a cool, interesting, but objectively speaking, Claire is the more interesting and the more useful character, so they need to shut their mouths.
I like that. See, I knew you girls were on it. I knew you guys had something to say. any other kind of interesting kind of observations on the Iron Fist, besides the lack of cool fighting scenes?
Oh, yeah, and you very quickly mentioned the guy who you said tried out for... the drunken guy. Oh, my gosh. So that was like, I was just kind of like watching out of having to complete it. And
yeah.
But when that scene came up, yeah. I was like... enthralled. He was amazing.
Yes.
His acting was amazing. His fighting was amazing. And when I found out that he actually had tried out for the role of Danny Rand, I was super sad and salty about it.
Yes, absolutely.
And think that they could have probably done something with a storyline with a person who was half Asian.
Absolutely.
They really could have, but they didn't. They didn't want to go there. They didn't want to take that risk.
And this guy could have done his own stunts.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you. It would have cut off like a bunch of training hours about, you know, like, I don't know. I mean, this guy comes from absolutely no martial arts background.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, come on, the authenticity.
Even little
of your
X-23
show.
Had martial arts.
Yeah.
Exactly. Thank you. That is so true. As a matter of fact.
And she's a Spaniard.
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. And you were telling us that she actually, the tape she sent in to try out for the part was her just doing martial arts.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Uh-huh.
Come on. I mean, you know, like, I hate to say this, but we're just so nitpicky as fans of comic books. That you're going to have to do better than this.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously, you really do. Not to knock Mr. Finn for his acting abilities, not to knock the whole storyline and the writers, but
you guys could have done better on the fighting scene and the authenticity of the story.
Yeah.
And I understand that you wanted to just get it done for the Defenders and, you know, bring that team together. But we're disappointed. I'm disappointed.
Yeah. Same here.
Same.
Yeah.
I mean, like I was, like Jen said, I was entertained, but my bar for entertainment is super low. I really liked the, I really, really liked Howard the Duck, the movie.
I love Howard the Duck too. Okay. That was Leah Thompson. She was awesome.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I loved it. You know what? Total side, we're getting derailed, but in the most recent Chip Zdarsky, Howard the Duck comic book run, Leah Thompson's character, not Leah Thompson's character, Leah Thompson, the person, does a little guest star appearance in the comic as Leah Thompson.
No way! That's super cool! That's,
See,
it's stuff like that that really makes us happy. Those little bits that you share with us. I love that.
It's not that hard
to give us something, guys. We're the ones who are going to buy the tickets to go see the movie. We're the ones who buy the comic books. We're the ones who, like...
buy the merch and everything.
We're the ones who talk about it on our podcast.
We're the ones who are going to tell our children, or if we decide to have them.
Our nephews.
Yeah,
our nephews, our little cousins, our baby sisters and everything.
Yeah.
About all the...
neighborhood kids.
Like Sergio, like, we're raising, like... you can't live without us.
Okay, honestly, seriously, when it comes to men and women, marketers, and it's just, as far as social science goes, women, when you market to women, you're not just marketing to that generation, you're marketing to the generation and that comes after them, as mothers, as aunts, as grandparents.
Yes.
And that spans sometimes over 2, 3, 4 generations.
Absolutely.
You know how many grandmothers I get in Heidi Ho itself during the weekend asking me for stuff?
Yeah.
Like, can you tell me this? And I give them a giant pile and they buy it.
Yeah.
Because they're going to give it to their sons. They're going to give it to their grandsons, granddaughters.
Yeah.
Like, they drop money.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
But yeah, we are, we're the caretakers. We're the upbringers. We are the ones who a lot of times hand down, family traditions and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, totally another reason, if you didn't need one, to really make sure to give attention to women and female fans.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Don't forget us, because we're where it's at.
Remember, George Perez started it, was, no, the Hernandez brothers. The Hernandez brothers started their comic book industry because
their mother. Yep, used to read comic books to them in bed at night.
There you go.
She just dropped the mic, guys, but she won't really actually drop it because it might break. Okay, guys, we are actually, fortunately, we have a second, beer to review today.
Fortunately.
Yes, because that other one, we didn't even finish it, guys, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
We are drinking the Dudes Brewing Company's Double Trunk. Double Trunk is an American Double Imperial IPA. It's 9.40%. Yes.
You know what? That explains a lot about how I'm feeling right now.
And this one you guys can get anywhere, I think, in the United States. It comes in a 4-pack canned version, or you can get it on tap at the brewery/tap room, which is at 1840 West 208th Street, Torrance, California, 90501. Sorry, guys, I drank too much Double Trunk.
And a nice little aside, this place is exactly 1 mile from where I live. I've walked there before to the Dude's Brewery. And they have cool things that go on during the week. They have live music. They have Geeks Who Drink, trivia nights. They have lots of cool stuff. So I'm very fortunate to live very close to it, and I highly recommend Dude's.
I'd also like to point out that right now there's a Groupon for a tasting those, what are they called? Tasters.
Flights.
Uh-huh. Yes. You could get for one person, for two people, for four people, and it's really economical, and it's served to you in a flight little, thing.
Like a paddle.
Like a paddle mm-hmm. shaped as a, what is it, the bowling pin.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah, because this brewery, the theme is the Big Lebowski's movie.
Oh.
The dude.
Oh, I never made that connection.
Really? Oh, my God.
First of all, I've never seen that movie.
What?
But I know all about the dude.
What? No way. I can't believe.
What? Yeah. Sorry.
It's on Netflix.
Is it?
I think so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you have to see it. It's kind of a weird. I don't know. It's awesome. I love it.
I had no idea that that's what that was from.
Yeah, see all those stickers that were like the dude abides or the dude says, and there's a lot of stickers like in the restroom of the quotes of the Big Lebowski. Just take a look.
No, I've never noticed.
At first, I didn't believe it until I went into the restroom and there's all these quotes from the Big Lebowski, and I'm like, what? And then I got the flight, and it's shaped like a bowling pin.
Oh.
And I was like, for sure, this is whole.
I've seen the paddle, but again, because I didn't see the movie, I never knew that that's what it was from. And there's a couple of beers that have the bowling pin on it, too, that I've seen.
Oh, wow.
See? Yeah. And I learned something new today.
And it's really cool because actually it's this brewery, this tap room, for instance, is really laid back. Like you got stuff where you got a Smog City where they're all hipsters, and then you have a Phantom Carriage, which is all dark and goth. And then the dudes is like, you're just relaxing, having a beer, and it's so, you know, it's just so laid back. I love it. And
I've actually still never been to Smog City or Phantom Carriage, but that is definitely the feel that I get at Dude's.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So laid back and stuff. Like, you could be there in your, like, pajamas. Cool. You know, it's cool. Nice. And everybody's super nice. So if you get a chance, if you're in Southern California, definitely check out Dude's. And Double Trunk is like, it's like, everybody knows Double Trunk.
Yeah. I definitely am an IPA drinker, and you give me a double IPA any day, I'm all about it. But Double Trunk is really one of my favorites.
Yeah, that's actually, as far as right now, it's my favorite from the dudes. I have tried other stuff, but this one's definitely my favorite.
On a hot summer night. Hot summer night after the mile walk from my house. A Coastal Eddy from Dude's is like so refreshing. It's their Pilsner, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a light beer, but full of flavor.
You know, and that's actually, I think that was the first brewery I actually went to was Dude's.
Mm.
The first craft beer I had was the Nothing from Smog City, but that was... Somebody bought that and brought it over, but I actually went to Dude's for the first time at a taproom / brewery.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool. And I actually went there today because I wanted to go there and get the new one. It was a berry thing, but they're closed on Mondays.
Most I know all about breweries being closed on Mondays because that's my day off during the week.
Oh, no.
And I live not only a mile from Dude's, but I live within a mile radius of at least 6 different breweries.
Yes.
And they are all closed on Mondays.
Yeah.
Why Mondays?
I don't know. Maybe because everybody was drinking on Saturday
and
Sunday.
Yeah, because they're open on the weekend, so I guess they just need a day off to recoup.
Yeah, but that was a surprise to me. But fortunately, I stopped into another along the way, I stopped into a liquor store, and they had the 4-pack of the Double Trunk. So
oh,
I was
okay.
like, yes.
Yeah.
Success.
That's a really cool thing about living in Southern California, because a lot of the local breweries have their beers in local liquor stores and in supermarkets.
Absolutely. That was my next stop. It's like, if I can't find anything here, I'm going to the supermarket.
Yeah.
Ralph's is the place to buy.
Even Target now has
even Target.
Pretty decent.
Really?
Yep. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And they have a pretty decent
selection of
local
brews.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Even the one in Compton, I dare say.
We're all just a bunch of hipsters.
Right? Yeah. Right? So what do you guys rate this brew?
I, like I said, Double Trunk is one of my favorite double IPAs. I definitely would give it a full. It's not a rigid for me, again, because it's not a Belgian, but it's very flavorful. You get that punch-in-the-face hoppy taste right off the bat. And for me, it kind of wanes after a while, so it's not, like, overpowering. And that 9. Whatever you said it was.
9.40.
Yeah, that 9.4 ABV definitely, for me, makes it a good beer to drink.
Absolutely. I completely agree. I think for me, it's also a full, not a rigid yet, but it's definitely, it has a place in my heart only because it gets the job done for me. Like,
right.
let's say I, you know, I had a hard day at work and whatever, I can get a 4-pack of this and have one beer and I'm like, mm-hmm, so good. I'll watch a movie.
Yes. One beer is all it takes.
Binge on something, you know, and we're good to go. Like,
yep.
It's a great buy for the punch and the flavorful taste.
Yes.
It's really hoppy. There's a nice kind of malty finish, I think. And then there's kind of a citrusy flavor in the back. I really love it.
That's what that was.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm going to go full on this.
Hold up. Let me just take a sip right now.
No, that's why I poured a little bit, because I'm like, it's got to be fresh in my mind.
I like it. Yeah, I used to like not really like IPAs, but drinking with you guys, I've really learned to appreciate them. And I like this one. I really like that citrusy aftertaste that you mentioned. I was just like, what is it? It's good. I like it. I think this is the first time I've had a double IPA.
Probably.
Yeah. I think so.
And it's not bad. I like it, and it's what was that other beer that we had that also came in a can, but I did not like because I kept making
it. It was the resin that was the from Six Point from Brooklyn. Yeah.
And
yeah, that one's harsher. It's very bitter, kind of like really hoppy bitter kind of. It looked like a Red Bull.
It looked like an orange and metallic Red Bull. And you see that one, that kind of hop, that really strong hoppy bitter aftertaste, I don't like that.
Yeah.
But this one, I like the flavor of it. Mm-hmm. I like it, and it was pretty good, and it wasn't bitter. I like the citrus of it. So I'm going to go with a full.
Nice.
Yeah.
Full across the board, guys.
Yay. Also, you know that. Also, I think drinking the previous one really, like, kind of like, oh, man.
Yeah,
relief.
You could have fed me anything after that. I was like, this is amazing.
Right? It totally threw it in another dimension there. So you guys are aware that the trailer for The Last Jedi came out just recently.
Yes!
So all over my Facebook.
Dude, I had an image of all over your face for some reason. Sorry. So we're going to watch it.
Light.
I'm like, what does it mean? What does it mean? I'm just like, I have so many questions. What does it mean? It's time for the Jedi to end. I don't understand why Luke is saying that.
I think he means the Jedi Order and how they used to do things. The whole, like, no attachments, no emotions and all that stuff. I think that's what he means. I think, like, the Jedi can't survive this new era. There needs to be something like the Jedi, but is it Jedi? Mm. Basically, there needs to be a new
thing for sensitive
people.
Yeah, no, and I get that because, I mean, if we all remember, the Jedi cannot have relationships, personal relationships, or marry or have children.
Yeah.
When Anakin did that with Padme, it was like they were trying to hide that she was pregnant and who she was pregnant by. And for him to have had that, that was like a big no-no. So I get that that's not a way that they can continue existing, because maybe the Force works better if they share their lives with people they love and not be like holier than thou, like monk status, I guess. But still, I have so many questions.
Yeah, same here. And I want them all answered, and I can't wait for this movie. It looks so good.
All I have to say is they really have to bring their game, because after Rogue One, man, I don't know.
Rogue One
was the shit.
Yeah. I definitely enjoyed Rogue One. Not that I enjoyed it more, but I seriously
had more feeling.
Yeah, I Rogue One more than Force Awakens.
Force Awakens was good. I liked
it. Yeah, it was good. I enjoyed it.
It was entertaining, but man, I cried. Yeah. Like, I legit cried at Rogue One.
Oh,
my
God.
Like,
yes.
I had
those puddles of tears underneath my double chin. Like, that's how I know a movie's good. Is one that's piling up on my double chin, and I'm just like wiping down here instead of up here. Because so I'm really excited. It's in Christmas, it comes out.
Yeah.
So, man, especially when you get tired of hanging out with your family, just go to the movie. Well, guess what? You're having a good time. Let's go do something together, a group activity. Let's go to the movies. So it's going to be good. I can't wait.
Bring the Star Wars experience to everybody.
Maybe by then I will have caught up. I really, on my list of things to do, I would like to rewatch the original three, and then I've never seen the prequels. And I know everyone says that I'm good and it doesn't matter, but I feel like I'm missing out. At least if I myself can be like, oh yeah, that was really bad, and know it from my heart, but I don't. So
or just be a naysayer and say, no, the prequels were good.
Oh man, you know what? I'm all for, you know, and I've said it once, I've said it probably a million times, but I'll say it one more time. Disney, please remake the first three episodes. I can't wait till you put your hands in there and you mold it to something amazing.
Yeah, because, like, there were some good ideas. There were some good concepts in there. But they failed in execution, plot, and, you know.
And I think it was during the first, one of the first times movies were, like, going to be completely green screened. Acting. And I think a lot of the actors were not used to green screen acting.
That makes sense.
So now that it's so common everybody knows screen. And so, you know, because we had what was his name? He's in Taken. I'm gonna kill your family. I'm gonna know it. How does it?
Liam Neeson.
Yeah. He was in it, and his acting kind of sucked in this. But I'm thinking it's the green screen. And then we have Padme, which was Natalie Portman, and she was in The Professional. I mean, she had a lot of acting, acting chops. And then for her to fail so badly with the green screen, I feel that it had to do with being only green screen, and then people didn't know how to handle that.
That makes
that time.
Sense. Mm-hmm.
That's how I'm, you know, living with this.
That's what you tell yourself.
That's what I tell myself.
Every time I think
cry
of
myself
prequels.
To sleep.
Every time I think of the prequels, I just think of who was Anakin's actor?
Kristen.
That dude. Anyways, I just remember him saying, "I don't like sand," and I'm just all like, I crack up every fucking time.
When did he say it?
When him and Padme were on Naboo on, like, a beach or something. It was in the second movie because he had the weird, like, braid thing.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And he was just like, I don't like that. It's coarse and rough. And I'm just like...
Oh, my God. I don't even remember. I must have just glazed through that. But isn't he from Tatooine?
Yeah, that's why.
It's Hayden Christensen.
Hayden Christensen. I knew it was a Chris somewhere in there.
And that's why he doesn't like Tatooine, supposedly. And I was just like, and that's why he likes Naboo, because there's not a lot of sand. And I was just like,
shut the hell up, dude.
It was the single most... comedic moment in the movie, and it was not supposed to be comedic, but I crack up every time.
It sounds funnier than the Jar Jar Binks stuff.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah,
let's not even speak of that. So, yes, what do you guys give the trailer so far? I'm just excited. I can't wait.
It looks really good. I'm not a big Star Wars fan, but I've enjoyed these last two movies that have come out, which has really been the reason why I want to go back and rewatch the first three and then also watch the prequels. So I'm really excited from a non-Star Wars fan. So I can only imagine how those true crazy fans feel after seeing. In fact, I don't have to imagine. Like I said, it was all over the Facebooks.
I know. I'm like, it's here. Yeah.
It's here, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm excited. It looks good. Looks good from the trailer.
I think it looks really good, mostly because whereas the first trailer played a lot on nostalgia, this one seems more original. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, there's Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker, like, doing, like, monologuing and everything, but it looks good. And I've read some online articles saying, like, oh, look how it reflects the first trailer. But thematically, I think they're very different. It seems to be taking a darker note, and also there's more, I think, originality to it.
Oh, yeah,
as well.
Absolutely.
So.
I'm in.
Yeah.
Plus, I like Ben as the bad guy, Kylo Ren. I can't wait. He's just, I just like him. He's just so unhinged. I love that. Why do I like unhinged, crazy people? I don't know. But I can't wait. And also, actually, on a little side note, I watch Girls, the series on HBO. Mm-hmm. It actually just finished the series forever.
Oh.
And Ben, who is Kylo Ren in the Star Wars movies, he plays an ex-love interest of the main character in Girls. And she said that while they were filming the second to the last episode, a lot of kids were walking, because it's filmed in New York.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So a lot of kids were running up to him with lightsabers and asking for his autograph. And she's like, it was so surreal.
Yeah.
Like, he's just this other character that, you know, like, kind of has taken everybody by storm.
Right.
So I'm like, oh, that's so cool. It's such a nice little...
Once you're in a Star Wars movie. Yeah. That's it.
That's like, it. You're set for life.
You're set for life.
Yeah.
You're going to be known.
Same with an MCU movie.
Yeah. Now with a Marvel movie. Yeah. Uh-huh. Same here.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's just... I know I'm going to cry when I see Carrie Fisher. Because when I first saw the trailer, I almost cried when I saw just the back of her head. And I was just like, Carrie Fisher.
I know. I felt the same way. I'm like, I always do this when I get excited. I'm like, I always do that. And my husband's like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, seriously, he'll, like, do the side eye, you know, like, what the hell? Don't embarrass me. But, yeah, no, I understand. I understand how you feel.
Definitely. Anyways, once those tickets are available for pre-order, guess what I always buy four tickets because I always take my siblings with me. And sometimes my brother, he doesn't go, and then I complain about him and how am I going to get to the movie theater now because he's the one that drives. But I always purchase four tickets. And so, if there's an extra one, you guys are in.
I like that. What was I going to say about that? This is a movie that you could possibly really enjoy on the 3XD theater in downtown LA.
Oh, mm-hmm. The one that has motion?
Yes. Oh, okay. I think this would be really good because there's a lot of, like, yeah. be, like, space travel and space fighting. So it's going to be cool.
I wish I could enjoy 3D, but I can't because of
your glasses.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I don't like the whole glasses on top of glasses thing. No. And the, like, all of my siblings, except for one, wears them, so we all hate 3D, and when Neon says, like, let's watch it 3D, we're like, you can watch it 3D.
My husband doesn't like 3D either, for whatever reason. So we usually try to do the non-3D, but I enjoy it. In the beginning, it kind of gives me a headache, but I get used to it.
Right, mm-hmm. right. It just gets that, yeah, definitely that little hump.
Yeah.
I should just get contacts, but...
You gotta do it for the movies.
For the movies, I'll say that. She's like, why are you getting contacts?
Do it for Star Wars.
Do it for Star Wars. I'm doing it for Star Wars, you guys. Appreciate me.
Nice. So, guys, what did we read this time?
The book that we are reviewing today, My Little Padawans, is Batwoman, the New 52 first story arc of Batwoman, Volume 1, called Hydrology. The story arc was called Hydrology. It's written by J.H. Williams III and W. Hayden Blackman. And interestingly, Williams was actually also the artist. He's a writer and an artist. And
you know, I don't know if you've noticed, but most of the, I think more than half of the people we've been reviewing the books are artists and writers.
Yeah, there's
which is
quite
amazing.
A few. Yeah.
I always love that when people are like multi-talented like that. I think it's so amazing.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Like share it with us.
And so, and then it looks like there were some guest artists, and the colorist is Dave Stewart, letterer Todd Klein, but the J.H. Williams III also did a lot of the cover art, and oh my gosh, the cover art that they show in here, it's just, this is the second time I've read this, this trade, and the first time I was just really impressed with the art, and not just the art, but the panel layouts throughout the book. It was just freaking amazing. I really loved them. So my props to Williams for sure, because he's very, very talented.
Yeah, I was noticing a lot about that. I mean, he had this style that was really interesting because there's so much shading and three-dimensional kind of like drawing in it, but mm-hmm. then he'll have like the red.
Yes.
Just solid.
Yes, the coloring definitely plays mm-hmm. a huge part in the storytelling here. And I love the way that the pages, a lot of them throughout the book, they're splash pages, but not only are they splash pages, but they're divided like across both pages, and then on the top is one part of the story that's taking place somewhere in Gotham, and on the bottom is a different part of the story that's taking place. Or there's a splash page where the main background picture is what's going on, and then there's like small little panels and little squares that are just scattered throughout both pages that are showing that something else that is going on simultaneously somewhere else.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you caught that. It'll be like a big action sequence in the back mm-hmm. with no dialogue, and then it'll have the dialogue and the movement within the panels.
Yes.
Within mm-hmm. the splash page. And I thought that was amazing.
Yeah. And I love, more than once, there is her cape is mm-hmm. like the background. Her cape is flowing across two pages, and then within mm-hmm. the cape there are small little panels.
There's
of
small little
stuff
panels,
going on.
Or the action is done in the color of the inside of her cape
yes.
in red,
uh-huh.
and it's visually very stunning.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So just to kind of do a little synopsis on the storyline, this book follows Kate Kane, where basically in the beginning we see there this This trade was, it gave us a zero issue. So when New 52 started, it looks like a lot of the 52 titles that were rebooted had zero issues, just like Rebirth had those Rebirth one-shot issues.
Yeah.
And in the zero issue, the story is being told through, from Batman's perspective. And let me just double check which issues are here. Does it say? Oh, yeah, 0 through 5. So there's 6 issues, including 0. But 0 issue is Batman kind of doing some recon on Batwoman, and he's trying to confirm that Batwoman is Kate Kane. Mm-hmm. And we find out that he is he's kind of watching her because he wants to recruit her for Batman Inc.
Mm-hmm. Not only that, I mean, we see Batman here as he is a detective.
Yes.
And that's what I really enjoyed that.
Exactly. And I love that, like, his monologue on just kind of the way he studies his subject and how he's saying, one of the things that I really liked was when he was saying, I have an idea that it's Kate Kane, but I'm not sure. And then he goes in a disguise, and he goes in a grocery little market, and then he accidentally is going to drop something or run into her or something like that. Something really, you know, like accidental.
Yeah.
And she, like, totally catches it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he's like, yep. She's Batwoman. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yes.
Yeah.
But it's not all of a sudden, and he doesn't assume anything. He goes through the motions.
He's very thorough. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
He's in. We see him in, I think, three different secret identity disguises.
As a homeless guy, as an old bookworm type, and then as, like, a thug.
Exactly.
And the thug one was supposedly his least complicated disguise.
Right? And isn't it, I'm sorry, I'm assuming that you guys, but for me, when I read Batman, especially when he's doing disguises, it's really for me reminiscent of, like, the animated series.
Mm.
And so when I read Batman, I read him in his voice.
Yeah.
So that's what I do.
I've never seen the series, even though everyone says it's amazing and it's the best Batman thing there is.
Mm-hmm.
And I've wanted to watch it, but when I actually went to go online, it had been taken off Netflix.
It's
only available if you have the DVD.
Yes, you can get it.
Netflix.
You can get it if they send it to you.
I think Amazon Prime has it.
I have a Prime account.
I do too.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Okay. Yeah. There you go. Then Amazon Prime has it, so you should definitely check it out.
Okay.
Amazon Prime.
The main reason it got put onto my radar is when I discovered that was the origin of Harley Quinn. Mm-hmm. I had no idea. And so I was really super interested in watching that because I was really, really disappointed with Mad Love when I read it.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to see that and kind of compare and also just get an idea of what this animated series was all about, because everybody that I talked to about it just had such high praises for it.
It's the best. It's the best. I think Kevin Conroy voices Batman, and everybody says Kevin Conroy is my Batman.
Yeah.
Pretty much. That's the meme.
Who's your Batman? Kevin Conroy. That and best Joker besides Heath Ledger.
Yeah.
Mark Hamill.
Right?
Yeah.
Of course. Of course, that goes hand in hand for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And for them to have revoiced the Killing Joke.
Yes.
Oh,
I was just going to say, small little insider story. Everyone at Heidi Ho knew that Killing Joke was being made before anybody else because Mark Hamill came in to buy
Killing Joke,
Killing Joke at Heidi Ho.
Oh my God.
And one of the owners was there and struck up a conversation with him and got him to confirm without confirming that they were doing an animated movie.
Damn, that is so cool. Mark Hamill, man. That dude, I have heard Mark Hamill on the Smodcast, Fat Man on Batman.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And oh my God, one of my favorite episodes on that podcast. It's a Kevin Smith podcast, and man, he geeks out.
Yeah,
he's a complete.
He's a huge Batman fan.
He's I know that Kevin Smith's a Batman fan, but Mark Hamill is a comic book fanatic.
Oh yeah,
so he goes on like. By date, by year, by issue, by freaking frame, page number. I'm just like, oh my god, I'm not worthy.
One of us.
Heidi Ho was Mark Hamill's LCS for the longest time.
No way.
He had a pull list with Heidi Ho, and in fact, if I looked up his name in the computer, his info probably would still
be there. No way. Yeah. What? You guys got to go to Heidi Ho, dude. That's all I got to say. You never know when you're going to run into Mark Hamill.
Yeah. We have pictures, just to confirm.
Yeah, I remember the day. He's come in a couple of times, but there was one day where we knew he was coming. And everybody got so excited, and I blow-dried my hair. And it's so funny because he comes in, and he had put a book aside. In fact, I think it might have been the day that he came to get Killing Joke.
Yeah.
And I went up to him, and I was trying to be super, like, just like blasé about, oh, this guy is Mark Hamill, because I'm like, to me, living in Hollywood, I'm always super aware of the fact that when celebrities are out, they're just out trying to be normal. And I feel like when people like rush them or like in the middle of them eating their dinner, like, can I get a picture? A lot of them are super, like, cool about it. I'm like, yeah, whatever. But, I mean, at the end of the day, that must get super tiring. And so when celebrities come into the shop, I'm always really aware of the fact that they're in here just trying to be normal and trying to get their shopping done or whatever. So,
like when Neil Patrick Harris came in with his kids.
Oh, my God.
And
I love him.
So I approached him. I said, hey, how's it going? My spiel to everybody. Let me know if I can help you with anything. And he was like, yeah, sure. In fact, I have a book put aside for me. I called for it yesterday, and I was the one who took the call. And I said, oh, okay. And then just because, I was like, and your name? Because I was trying to make it seem like, okay, you're no one special, dude. Because I didn't want him to feel like I was making a big deal about it or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so then he looked at me, and he kind of looked at me like, really? And he's like, Mark Hamill. I'm like, okay. And I just walked out.
Honestly, legitimately,
I could not pull that off. I'm crying. That's so cool.
Legit. I'm so fucking face blind that probably would be me. Because that one guy from iZombie who always comes in.
Yeah.
And then we had the other day an actress for. Oh, I forget what it was. She even told me, and I was just like, oh, that's cool. I was just like, oh, that's cool. And at the same time, I was just like, I don't know. I don't recognize your face.
Yeah.
Because I'm so face blind. I keep the iZombie guy is the one that immediately comes to mind. Because Kristen knows who he is immediately off the bat. But every time this dude comes in, I'm just like, do I know you? I'm sorry. And it's just like, oh my god, I'm so face blind.
The other thing with Mark Hamill is that I had not really seen him in anything for the longest, and he's had a really active career in animation.
Oh yeah.
But as far as like in the big screen or on TV or whatever, I hadn't seen him. And so in my mind, he still
looks like young Luke
Skywalker. Yeah. And so the truth of the matter is that when I saw him, I would not have been able to pick him out in a lineup if you tried to get me to. Because he's older. He's wider.
Grayer.
Yes, grayer. And so it was not at all what I was expecting. I know that it doesn't make sense for him to be the same, but in my mind, that's who I thought was going to walk in.
You were going to be like those baby blue eyes.
Yes.
With the straight, like, what is it called? The bucket cut?
Yeah.
And a bowl cut. Uh-huh.
And other people came in and recognized him right away. The shop was not that busy, but the people that were in there recognized him and actually approached him
and asked him for his autograph, and they took a picture. And he was the nicest guy about it. And, in fact, one of the guys said, "Oh, you must get tired of this. This must be annoying," as he's posing with a selfie. And Mark told him, "No, you know what? It's just part of the job."
Mm-hmm. Oh, so, he sounds amazing. When he was talking on the podcast, he just sounds like so giving, such a nice man. Yeah. I just thought, oh my God, you just seem so pure at heart, almost. You know,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's so strange. But oh,
there's
yeah.
a reason he was Luke Skywalker.
Right. It's just he's perfect.
So. We kind of got a little sidetracked, but we are still in Batman land, even though it sounds like we're talking about Star Wars again.
I mean, they're both American icons.
So this is my first introduction to Batwoman.
Okay.
One of the things I noticed is that she is, she's gay.
Mm-hmm.
And, has there been other books where she was had been introduced? Because I absolutely came into this with no backstory.
Oh, okay.
There was Batwoman Elegy, which was the previous Batwoman book before this. And she had come out in the Detective Comics series before the New 52, before they rebooted mm-hmm. that entire verse. But I am not entirely familiar with that one, but she has been established as a lesbian. And way back in... what was it? In the Silver Age, there was a Batwoman who was Kate Kane, and she wasn't a redhead, but she had been introduced, I forget for why, but also in the Batman 66 series, a Batwoman had been introduced as well, because that was to break up rumors about Batman and Robin being gay.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Or was that the aunt figure? I forget. I get them mixed up.
But she has, in the DC universe, mm-hmm. she has had relationships with other women. In fact, you see there's kind of a little bit of a shout-out mm-hmm. to her past relationship with Renee Montoya.
Mm-hmm.
So you see where she's in the police department, and she's standing in front of the picture of Renee there on the wall.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't. Mm-hmm. And that didn't click to me.
And she's kind of like stuck there, and she has a little conversation with Sullivan. Is that her name?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And Kate kind of says, "Yeah, we were." And Sullivan says, "I know."
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Renee Montoya.
I see that now.
Yes.
But I like the way it's subtle that they, because like this is my first introduction to Batwoman.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really subtle. It wasn't shocking. Like mm-hmm. it wasn't like straight on a sex scene with boobs and stuff. It was just really, really, it really was, I don't know, it was really a smooth transition into them presenting her to me as a lesbian, so I wasn't really shocked.
Mm-hmm.
I know you guys had mentioned it before, but I mean, you know, when you guys mention something, I don't put it together when I'm actually reading the comments. But I thought it was a great, great way that they presented it on this story
mm-hmm.
to me. Like, if somebody were to pick this up today, it wouldn't be like a shock. It would be like something, like, if you weren't expecting it, because you don't expect that stuff. Especially for them to be so good about writing something like this.
Uh-huh.
But it was just great. The artwork, the writing and everything, I thought it was really good. For me, the first instance that I actually caught on was when she was at the club.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And she was, I think Bruce had said, Bruce, I keep calling him Bruce, but it's Batman. Batman had said, Batman had said that, that she lives life. She's more adventurous in
yes,
her regular than he is.
He mm-hmm. can't.
Uh-huh. And then you see her, like, in a panel, like, kissing another girl, and I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. okay.
Yeah.
Got
yeah,
it.
And in the details, I don't remember if it was in issue zero or in the further issues where he says that, that she was dismissed from West Point
yeah.
under Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Yeah,
right.
And
which they point out in mm-hmm. this book, mm-hmm. and I'm like, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, forever, I'm like, what does that mean? Don't Ask, Don't Tell. What mm-hmm. what did you want to tell me? I want to know.
Wait, seriously, you don't know what Don't Ask, Don't Tell is? Or you didn't know what it is?
I know now because you just looked at me like that. You know what? I always associated it with guys. Like when I see guys and Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and I'm like, oh, okay, cool, I get it. But mm-hmm. now that you're saying it out loud, mm-hmm. and you looked at me like, I'm like, oh.
Well, for mm-hmm. and honestly, it a lot of people these days might not really, younger yeah. people for sure, might not really right. know what it is exactly. because we're a lot more open these days.
And it was disbanded yes. Back in the Obama early into yes. the Obama uh-huh. administration.
But it was kind of a compromise that, what's his name? Clinton.
Bill Clinton.
That Bill Clinton made with regards to the issue of gays in the military. And so for the longest time, it was illegal. It was not accepted. I don't know what the right word is, but if you were, found out to be homosexual,
You were dishonorably discharged
yeah,
from the military.
You were not even allowed to be in the military, and if you went ahead and got into the military, you would be dishonorably discharged. Mm-hmm. So the compromise that Clinton made was, look, we won't ask you if you're gay, and you don't tell us. But if we find out, then we're going to boot you. So it was a kind of a step in the direction that I feel like, I'm sure that the LGBTQ community doesn't see it, but to me, I felt like it was kind of like a step in the direction of trying to be more open, but still having to deal with the fact that it was not, being gay was not at all something that was embraced back in the 90s.
Yeah.
And even the early 2000s.
Yeah. And
see, the thing is, I always associated it with guys, and then for a long time we haven't even talked about it because, like you said, Obama disbanded it.
Yeah.
So when I was reading it, I thought Don't Ask, Don't Tell was that she actually did something horrible. And then like, don't ask her and she won't tell, they just dismissed her.
Yeah, no, she actually starts a relationship with one of her trainers or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it's in here, but it's in Rebirth they addressed it.
Yeah, I think they mentioned it somewhere here okay. too. But the person that she had been in a relationship denied it. But she basically admitted it.
Yeah.
And that's why she was discharged.
Yeah. In fact, mm-hmm. in the book that I read, the only other Batwoman book I've read is Rebirth. And in that, she even cites her father telling her, citing that her father had always raised her to be, truthful and to not lie about mm-hmm. things that were important. And so when they asked her, and they even gave her every out, and she's like,
This is me.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I like that.
And it was just like, yeah, as a person in the LGBT community, I have strong opinions about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. But mostly about this is that I'm glad that they mentioned it
yeah.
in this
yeah,
book.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like that, this is a thing that happened. And I really like that when people say, like, oh, comic books are a way of escaping fantasy. I'm just like, really? Really?
Yeah.
Really? No. The comic books are going to reflect the world in
which they exist.
Yeah, comic books, any art medium, any, like, art itself, music, writing, comics, illustration,
for
animation.
Instance, Luke Cage. I mean, mm-hmm. that, you know, took the whole, like,
the whole,
the hoodie with the
yeah,
holes
yeah.
Mm-hmm. and the whole, hands up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What was that slogan they said?
Hands up, don't shoot.
Hands yeah. up, don't shoot.
And a lot
Black
of people,
Lives Matter.
And I got a lot of flack where people were like, oh, you know, like if I wanted politics, I don't want that in my comic book character series. And I'm like, how can you say that? Like that's what anchors it to our world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like that's what, you know, like.
That's what makes it, like, that's how we can relate to these characters.
Absolutely.
And what they do. Mm-hmm. So I'm very glad that these things reflect what's been happening in the real world, especially
yeah.
at the time for when they were created.
Yes.
That this mm-hmm. was a thing that happened, and that kind of makes it like, you know, like like, even though now people may have forgotten, and this new generation doesn't even really know about
Don't Ask, like, for me, when I was reading it, it didn't click until right now when you looked at me. I was like, oh, yeah, that's right.
and there's actually people that I know who were targeted by Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and mm-hmm. who were dishonorably discharged from the military because of it.
It was like and, a freaking witch hunt, man.
Yeah, and I mean, definitely, back in the day, I think that it was what Clinton as a Democrat could do, but it definitely was not okay, and it was, targeting the LGBTQ community, making it so that they couldn't serve the country, even if they wanted to, without not being true to themselves.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah.
That's what I think. And the reason they were able to reach a compromise and everything is because I don't think they themselves realized how many queer people were in the military, uh-huh. and the answer was a lot.
Yeah,
my brother's his recruitment officer. She's a lesbian. Mm-hmm. And now after that was disbanded, she's married mm-hmm. and she has the full rights and has adopted kids. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, and my brother even told me, there's like, there's a lot of lesbians in the military. He was just like, there's a lot.
Yeah.
And I was just like, yeah. And it's just like, with the disbandment of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and the fact that this witch hunt against LGBT community, against the LGBT community has allowed more queer people to be like, oh, well, I can, this is, because a lot of LGBT people are poor. Are poor or they're homeless or they've been kicked out mm-hmm. from their families because they're still not accepted. And this is a real thing. And the yes. only out that they can see that is immediately available is join the military. Mm-hmm. As with any other
disenfranchised
community, is that the military is there to help protect you. And then when Don't Ask, Don't Tell was there, and there was like a witch hunt to find like the gays, it was another way of disenfranchising them and making it so that there's absolutely no avenue for these people to exist.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Even from a place supposedly as open as the military.
Yeah.
Wow, I just, you know, you saying that out loud right now, it just made me realize that that's something that I didn't even know about. I mean, it's really eye-opening for me right now. Like, I feel like I'm having the feels right now.
And the thing that people, I think, don't really realize is it wasn't that long ago. I mean,
no, not at all.
Yeah.
It's not even a decade.
Yeah. No.
And, we see things like marriage rights and the right to adopt children and all that kind of thing happening for the LGBTQ community, and I are very quick to forget that that was not always the case.
No, and, not at all.
Yeah, and the fact that something as grand as serving your country, because you identified as gay, you would be denied the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Like, you'd think they'd be all for it, but no. Apparently, just because you like the same sex, suddenly makes you, like, not worthy, or just, like, of being in the military, or serving your country.
Yeah.
Like, these people have more guts than your bitch ass ever has. Oh, I'm sorry. I probably had a little bit too much to drink.
No, but it's true. I mean, I feel like, God, you know, it just takes so much to, you know, do something like that. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, to live that lifestyle, I mean, you really have to grow a tough skin.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a choice by any means, but you really have to, like, you know, you're fighting upstream constantly. Mm-hmm. I mean, even the way things are now where, like you said, there's same-sex marriage, there's adoption, mm-hmm. you know, like, we all love Doogie Howser. But, I mean, there's still, like, a lot of small groups that still don't accept them, like she was saying, that, like, the family will, like, throw them out into the streets, mm-hmm. and then they're homeless.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That totally sucks.
Yeah. So the fact that they do
not only write Batwoman as a gay character, but also address the real world issues that LGBTQ community deal with. One of the main reasons why I really enjoyed this book the first time I read it, and also now the second time. But in addition, the realistic way that her not Batwoman life is portrayed is like super awesome, just as a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Without identifying, regardless of what, you know, who she likes to date or have relationships with, just as a woman, a single woman, going out and having fun and having a hard day, having a drink, going out on a date.
Running a company.
Yeah, running a company. And, like, being, like, so stressed out or frustrated or whatever and, like, trying to just burn off steam by going to the club and picking up a rando at the club,
right?
Like that was my that was one sure. of my favorite parts of the book, because the writers, even though they're male, the writers were showing that she's embracing her sexuality. Like mm-hmm. women get such flack for being sexual and for enjoying sex and for doing the exact same things that men do, and we're labeled, you know, sluts and whores and things like that. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it was shown in here as just a normal thing to do, and it was just so awesome that the writers showed that aspect of Batwoman.
Not only that, I really like the fact that even though Batman made a comment about her being more of her enjoying her personal life, mm-hmm. her, like, non-Batwoman life, he didn't knock her in his comment. Mm-hmm. He was like, I wish I could.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So he was celebrating her zeal mm-hmm. for life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I really like that, too. I love that about her. She's just amazing. I love the fact that she has military training in her fighting style.
Mm-hmm.
I love that she's really disciplined.
Yes.
I love that she, not like I said, I love the dark figures. So she also carries this guilt
yeah.
within mm-hmm. her. She had a twin sister
mm-hmm.
Who went crazy. And mm-hmm. she was admitted into Arkham, right, for some time?
I think she was.
She was, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually became kind of a super villain.
Yeah, they mentioned that, yeah.
Yeah.
It's really in passing, sort of. They mm-hmm. don't really give us any details about her being a villain or what type of villain she was or what she...
That was the plotline of Batwoman Elegy.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's kind of left up in the air, but you mostly what you get from this mentioning of her sister being a super villain or... you get the sense of guilt she feels. Mm-hmm. For some reason, she's feeling guilty about that maybe she could have stopped it, that maybe she should have reached out to her more, and so forth. So,
there's some guilt there, but there's also anger because her father kept it from her that uh-huh. her sister was still alive. So yeah. she didn't even know for the longest time.
Uh-huh.
That's true.
Yeah.
There's the anger and the guilt. So she's, uh-huh. you know, like, and her dad's like her only living relative uh-huh. at this point.
And now their relationship is strained yeah, because right, of that exactly. lie that he told yeah. her. Yeah.
Yeah. So I like that the darkness, a dark kind of like... kind of fighting her way through it physically and trying to help people by being Batwoman.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. I like that about this character.
Mm-hmm. So she actually does have another living relative because we see her cousin.
Yeah, her cousin.
Bat Kane.
Yeah, mm-hmm. is there, and she's kind of trying to train her and teach her how to be a little... mini vigilante.
Yeah. Because she's already Flamebird.
Right,
yeah.
That's what I was
saying. She's Flamebird.
Yeah.
And,
but Batwoman, I was trying to get a sense of, was she kind of is like basically telling her, look, yeah, you're Flame Bird, but that ain't nothing. Like, mm-hmm. And I was trying to get a sense of, was she doing that to kind of like motivate her, or was that something, was that her tactic? Cause she told her, you're not going to go by Flame Bird anymore. You're just a plebe. So mm-hmm. you see her military background come out in the way that she's trying to train her.
Yeah.
But you see she has a lot of like moral dilemma about whether or not she should be doing this in the first place because mm-hmm. it's putting her into harm's way.
Yeah. But at the same time, like, Bette does have experience with this, and she needs a trainer. And here you see the difference. Like, Batman is very good of training mini vigilantes.
Yes.
That's what all his Robins are for.
Right,
Batgirls. Although some of them do die. But they come back. They come back.
As supervillains, he said in here, that they have a way. He actually tells her, "You be careful with Bette because sidekicks have a way of dying and coming back as supervillains."
Yeah. Specifically talking about Red Hood.
Yep.
Poor Jason.
Poor Jason.
But he was the only one, and I mean, now he's kind of like a goodish guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. I love Jason.
I like Red Hood, actually.
Mm-hmm. And Tim Drake is now Red Robin, and he's doing his own thing, leading the Teen Titans. And then now we have Damian. And of course, the more successful one.
Dick!
Richard Dick Grayson.
Nightwing. Yes.
But what you were saying about Bette having her experience and that you said we see the difference between Batwoman as a trainer and Batman.
Raising his own little mini vigilante.
With her, we see her having more, it feels like she's trying to be like not only her trainer, but she's also trying to be like her older sister, kind of she has that loving kind of sense.
Mm-hmm.
That she's trying to look after her.
She's trying to protect her.
Yeah. Where Batman doesn't do that at all.
Yeah, true.
Mm-hmm.
True.
Which is the feeling I got when she basically told her, you're not good enough and you're never going to be good enough.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like she... Here's another... Like, I've made this reference before, but I'm going to make it again. She Harry and Anderson her. She just like... She was mean to her on purpose to get her to stop because she felt like that was the only way she could protect her.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
But as it always happens, she did the opposite.
Yeah. Well, what is it? Who is it she says? She said, I've fought with so-and-so.
Deathlock or Deadshot? Which one was it?
Deadshot.
One of those dead guys.
I think it was Deadshot.
But I was, like, really surprised because I'm not familiar with Flamebird, so I was like, whoa.
She was in the Teen Titans, so I'm going to say Deathstroke.
Okay, it was Deathstroke, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and I was like, whoa. But still, Kate was like, no.
She said, then it must have been on his bad day.
Right? I know. I was like, dang, okay.
Savage. But onwards to why we picked this book. The main plot of Batwoman in this one is that there has been a series of kidnappings in Gotham, tied to one singular woman who they are calling La Llorona.
Yes.
So La Llorona features, the myth of La Llorona features in this strongly because there is there's a woman who's stealing children and like drowning them.
Mm-hmm.
And in one of the passages, the family who encounters her, they said it turns hard to breathe. It's like they're drowning.
Mm-hmm.
She sucks the air out of their lungs as if they're actually drowning. Mm-hmm. And in the story itself, there's a two-page spread where they explain the myth, and I actually like how they do explain it. Because, technically, it's overall, like, Llorona is a simple story.
Yeah.
Woman has kids, woman drowns her kids, woman regrets it, and then she kills herself.
Right.
And comes back as a ghost. Average haunting.
Crying endlessly for her children.
Her children were males.
Mm-hmm.
In the myth.
Uh-huh.
And so she basically only went after males.
Oh, I never heard that before.
In the myth. Yes. And so she would try to coerce young men, maybe 15 and under,
uh-huh.
maybe even 17 and under, to come to her. Because she was trying to recuperate her children.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. In this story, though, in Batwoman, we see there's a lot of kids that are missing,
mm-hmm.
some of which are being found dead, mm-hmm. and some of which are still
missing.
Just missing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And because a lot of the parents are maybe low-income families or whatever, they refer to them as it's La Llorona.
Yes,
you know, and everybody from Batman to Batwoman to, you know, the cops, they're like, this isn't what's going on, guys.
Yeah.
So they're constantly trying to figure out who's stealing the kids.
Mm-hmm.
But lo and behold, there is such a specter of sorts,
mm-hmm.
that is La Llorona, or is charged with the with the charge to be that woman, or tying her to being La Llorona.
Right. And in this book, the story is that the kids were playing in the boathouse. Her kids, Maria, her name's Maria.
Right.
Maria's kids were playing in the boathouse, and she was drinking and was too drunk to pay attention, and they drowned.
Mm-hmm.
And when she realized what had happened, out of grief and out of guilt, she herself drowned herself and mm-hmm. And died. And so that is the story that a lot of the Latino families that are having their children taken are mm-hmm. recounting to Batwoman and all the police officers that are coming and investigating the story. Mm-hmm. And like Jen said, that's one of the, besides Batwoman being a kick-ass female character, the fact that La Llorona is such a mainstay story in Latino culture was mm-hmm. super interesting to have it show up in a big two book and mm-hmm. for it to be such a big part of the storyline, because I don't know any Latino who's not had a mother or a grandmother tell them the story of La Llorona.
Exactly.
And my grandmother used to tell me a story about how she saw her floating in
yes.
the street.
Yeah.
Oh, my God,
she
yes.
used to tell me this story, and it was, like, so fascinating and so freaking scary at the same time. But, I mean, my grandmother, just the way she recounted the incident and the story, like, and it was my grandmother. Like, everything my grandmother said, I took for gospel. It was the truth. And so when I got older and I started hearing other people tell the story, and then I started seeing, like, the story or the theme come out in books or in TV shows or in movies, I was like, man, Grandma pulled some BS on me.
Well, you know what? And it's so strange because I grew up with people telling the story about my uncle seeing La Llorona,
uh-huh.
Where she floated like maybe a foot above ground.
That's what my grandmother said.
And she was covered in a white veil.
Yes, that's what my grandmother said.
That her hands looked beautiful, but at times they looked like cryptic, like, you know, cripple. Like shriveled up claws.
Uh-huh.
And they said that if you were unfortunate enough to get close enough to where she would reveal her face, that it would be beautiful at one point and then it would like turn to like a ghoul the
mm-hmm,
next.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
which they use in the story,
yes,
for
they
this
do.
Like she morphs from a beautiful woman to a crying
yeah.
old woman to like
a rotting old corpse,
shriveled up corpse.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I really like that visually stunning, what they do with
yeah.
that, because, she's just like all over. They do it to show movement on how she moves from one place to the other and how she can
mm-hmm.
morph from when people see her. And that was amazing. I really love that. And they add a little bit onto it, because in this version of La Llorona, she feeds off of grief, and not just like people losing their children grief. She feeds off of Batwoman's grief,
yes.
and anger and
yeah.
resentment
and guilt
and guilt and
uh-huh.
guilt about her killing her sister.
Mm-hmm.
Was it? Or how she feels she thinks she killed her sister.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Fell off a plane or something.
Yeah, she said she was too late.
Yeah, too late to save her, basically,
mm-hmm.
and that's why she feels. And that's what she uses against her to, she uses, like, illusions and like hallucinations mm-hmm. to kind of get her until Batwoman finally accepts her grief and her basically she's like, I'm not gonna let this hold yeah. me back, and that's how she defeats La Llorona.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that we've actually seen in other movies how they show, like, if they show you imagery of what, you know, is you're feeling guilty about and what, you know, like what makes you grieve, that you will go into a state of believing that that's real, that you're permanently into that that stage of grief or anger or despair, and you can't actually emotionally move on, which fortunately we see that Batwoman is not that kind of person. Mm-hmm. She's like, it's not my fault.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she breaks free from that loop.
Yeah.
Which
she
in turn
finally accepts it. Yeah.
Yeah, she's like, no, it was not me, girl. Mm-hmm.
And in fact, she turns it around on La Llorona and mm-hmm. tells her, look, what happened to me was not my choice. The choice was taken away from me. But you chose to drink and you chose mm-hmm. to not watch your children, and it is your fault and you need to accept it. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of what breaks the spell mm-hmm. that La Llorona is under.
Exactly.
And we find out that she actually has been like taken under by Medusa.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Medusa, yeah,
yeah. There was somebody conjured up the spirit to kind mm-hmm. of kind of like bond with her in order for her to
yeah.
have this
mm-hmm.
Constant grief,
yeah.
and mm-hmm. For her to do their bidding, and it is Medusa.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which is this when I first read it, I thought it was like really Medusa, but
right,
it's actually just like a faction of bad people.
Yeah. I mean, their head could be Medusa. We haven't
yeah.
read past Volume 1.
Right, yeah.
But, like, their head could be. But the group itself is called Medusa.
Yeah, which I hadn't remembered that at the end of this volume, we don't really get any closure as far as what's happening to the kids. So
yeah.
we don't know if they're alive. In fact, that's what Batwoman says at the very end. Mm-hmm. He goes to the family who originally... She goes to the family who originally asked for her help and mm-hmm. says, look... I haven't found your kids, and I don't know if they're still alive, but if they are, I will bring them back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that would, I mean, but the artwork itself, I mean, I think it's amazing. And I don't know if it's watercolor or, I don't know what it is, but it's really, there's a lot of dynamic,
I don't know how he does his art.
Yeah.
I really like the cover arts that they use.
Yes,
but
the
also
cover is awesome.
Also, how they draw herself in her Batwoman outfit, it really stands out from the rest of what everyone else wears. I really, really like it.
And I love this stuff, where there's fight scenes, and it's the fight going on in the background, and then there's like little x-ray boxes where you see the impact of her punches, and
mm-hmm.
like the ribs, they're cracked,
mm-hmm.
and here the arm is broken, and over here you see the jaw is cracked once she kicks him in the
mm-hmm.
face. I love that.
It delivers the fact that she can fight. That
yeah.
these punches, like, the reason that they don't get up is because they fucking hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even Batman acknowledges in the beginning that is a fighting style that he has
never seen before.
Mm-hmm. That she made it up herself of all of the experience that she had.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. Well, my favorite part is it's actually similar to yours. It's actually when her cousin is she's dressed up in her suit and she's going out to fight on her own because she wants to prove herself.
Mm-hmm.
But in the background, she's actually with her girlfriend.
Yes.
And in black and white, in these like little squares and rectangles, you're seeing how they're making love. But in the bigger splash in the background, there's the fight scenes and the dialogue and everything. But you see this, like, amazing love.
Yeah.
You know, this amazing love scene. Like,
yeah, and actually, today as I was rereading the story, those scenes really stood out to me. Because as far as comic book goes, like, you don't... When you think of passionate... love scenes, you would never think of a comic book coming to mind as being an example. Mm-hmm. But the way that the artist
drew and colored and everything and the way that they're placed. And it's just, it is. It's super, super intimate and passionate and very tastefully done.
Yeah, it's not gratuitous. It's not like
this. Yes.
It looks like you're looking into an intimate scene between two people, one who's finally decided to trust somebody to be this close.
Uh-huh.
And I thought that was really good, and they did it very, like you said, very tastefully done.
If anything, all you see in these panels are, like, just faces.
Mm-hmm.
You see very little torso, and if you do, there's no nudity.
Yeah.
But you feel the passion
coming
through the pages. Mm-hmm. The, you know, the parted lips, the half-closed eyes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just amazing. The just kind of like in the ending, I think you see her how she's just unbound, like full of passion in her face. I'm just like, wow. Uh-huh. But in the same pages, you see, you know, like her cousin being completely, like, almost mortally wounded. And you're just like,
that parallel is really striking.
Yes, thank you for saying it that way, because that's exactly what I was trying to say.
Yeah, and I have to say, for as much as I'm saying that I love the art, and I do love the art, and there are definitely pages where you get that feeling of watercolor, which I don't think it is, but I mean the way that it flows and
with the
everything
hair
is really cool. But I am definitely going to give just J.H. Williams III, man, the serious side eye for drawing the freaking nipples into the Batwoman costume.
Yeah,
took my attention away every single time he did it, and it made me so annoyed because the book otherwise is like so great, the story, the art, the social issues, everything, but those damn nipples.
And it's just like, she's supposed to be wearing armored.
Yeah, right? That's what I thought.
Yeah, she's supposed to be wearing, and you can see her nipples. That's
exactly
not how armor works, honey.
Yeah.
And also, that chaps. That definitely chaps. As women, we're telling you now, that fucking chaps and it hurts, and it's not, it does not get any better.
Yeah, so it definitely was something that kept catching my eye this time around that I was reading it, and when I saw it, I on purpose went back to kind of look to see if that was just maybe like a one-time thing or
if
it was consistent, and it's definitely consistent.
Yeah.
Like, I'm looking at this page right now, and the way that it's drawn is as if her suit is like see-through, because the way that it's colored, you actually not even just get the pointiness of the nipples, but like an outline of the areola.
Yes, yes, I was just going to say that. I'm like, she has Oreo cookie nipples, as far as I'm concerned.
And it's just super, super annoying. And the other thing that really annoyed me, for as tastefully as the love scene was dealt with, the fact that we actually have to see a scene where Bette is getting naked to put on her costume, like, that was unnecessary.
That's what I was thinking. I was like,
it was unnecessary.
And for a moment, I was like, are they just showing how intimate their relationship is because she's able to undress in front of her?
It could be. That's kind of how I took it as. Because, like, when I'm with my sister, I'm gonna be real here. Like, if I need a change, it's just like, whoop, there you go. I cleaned her diapers. There's nothing to hide here.
I cleaned her poop.
Like, it's just like, there's nothing to hide here.
And actually, that's how I took it. I mean, like, when Frank's home, my husband, like, I'm walking around naked. That's it. And then, you know, if he likes it or not, I don't care. I'm just comfortable with you, dude. That's how it is. But I wouldn't do that with my brother, nor my nephew, nor my aunt. I wouldn't do it with my aunt. But I think that's how I took it, because that's how I felt like, I'm so intimate with my husband that I wouldn't share that with my aunt or my cousins or, I don't have any sisters, so but that's how I took it.
And I used to undress in front of my best friend, and like, we would share dressing rooms when we'd go to the mall and stuff. And I walk around naked in front of my husband all the time. But this, I just was like, what? And that might be the case, but what was the purpose for it to have to be drawn and shown? She's literally just changing into her gray outfit that that Batwoman is telling her she has to wear. So, I don't know.
It felt a little gratuitous?
It did, and also because of the fact that she is younger, and she is super, super, like, what's the word I want to use? Because even in the scene where, let's see, where are we at? I might be looking at something else. And I don't know what her age is here, but it just, she's younger than Kate, but it just seems so, like, creepy. Creepy stalker-ish.
Like voyeurism?
Yeah, and not to anybody that's in the book reading, but like as just, that it, I felt like it was just the artist's way of being like, okay, male readers, here's some nakedness for you to keep you going.
Yeah.
Until you get to the next nipple shot.
And maybe that's what the nipple shots are for. I don't know.
I mean, it seems like men don't care about women if they're lesbians unless they can see some tits.
And I don't know, because I see this a lot in comic books as far as art and women. And I don't know, is it because men want to draw it because they know other men are looking at it? Or is that how they really think that it happens in real life? I don't know what the reason is. All I know is that every time it happens, it catches me and it pulls me out of the story.
Because as women, we know that's not... That's not how it does. That's not how it works.
Yeah, one of my biggest pet peeves is costumes that look like they're just painted on.
Mm-hmm.
And especially the boob area where the costumes go, like, into the cleavage and are, like, so skin tight. Mm-hmm. And even if it was skin tight, that's not how the boob area works.
That's not how spandex works.
Yeah.
That's not how it does. Is she using boob tape, like to stick that costume down in between the cleavage? That's not how it works.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Physics, people. It's not how it works.
That's not how it works.
Because she has spandex on doesn't mean she's not wearing a bra.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And if she isn't wearing a bra, then that girl is chapped.
Yes.
So much chapped.
Or if she isn't wearing a bra, her boobs should be super small. Because that's the only way she could possibly be doing all those acrobatic and fighting moves without a bra.
Yeah, because, like, she's going to be wearing a training bra.
Yeah.
Because, like, those boobs flop around. You can't fight.
Yeah.
You can't fight. Like,
oh, yeah.
I mean, it's a struggle. They get in the way.
Yeah. So all we're saying here, people, is ask a woman.
You know, and I see a lot of women who wear, like, workout clothes and they wear sports bras, and they still look voluptuous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's not like you can't draw a woman with the sports bra on without having big boobs. So it's like you have no excuse, guys. That's just not how it works.
Yeah. So other than that, I really, really enjoyed Batwoman. I never read the second story arc to this, but I had forgotten that we didn't have closure to this Llorona storyline, so now it makes me want to go back and read it again.
Mm-hmm.
But reading this Hydrology story arc, the volume one here, actually really got me interested in moving forward to read the Rebirth Batwoman when it came out. And as much as I read is really good, and it turns out in Rebirth that she actually is training a whole set of people to be out there doing vigilante stuff. And I can't remember, I think it's like some of the...
In Detective, that's where she's doing all the kick-ass training, because the Batwoman comic just started, I believe, on the 30s.
And actually, that's what I meant, is she's very... The Batwoman character is present in Detective Comics.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, she's right. Batwoman just started, and it's written by Marguerite Bennett, who is an awesome writer. She wrote Bombshells, DC Bombshells, which is an awesome story. If you want to read a DC book that is chock full of all the female characters.
That takes place in World War
II. Set in World War II, then that is the book for you. It is freaking amazing. Mm-hmm. She also writes for the Aftershock small publishing company. She writes a story called Animosity.
And the insects.
The story, and insects. This Animosity is about what happens when one day all animals can think and talk and are sentient and they're pissed off.
You know what? From the story, from the title, I did not think that's where you were going with the story. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah. So Animosity is really good. I really recommend it. Insects is Insects is really good too. I like it a lot.
It's a Victorian era lesbian love story.
Yep. Where the women are in. Where the women are transformed, morph, I don't know what the word is, but there's a lot of, like, myth and storytelling around the fact that they're actually these, like, grotesque bugs.
Yeah. Wow. It's great. I love it. It's my favorite.
It's really good. It's really good. And that's also published by Aftershock.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So, yes, Marguerite Bennett is writing The Rebirth Batwoman. Thank you for correcting me, because Batwoman is in Detective, nice. Which is written by King writes Batman.
King is writing Batman.
Okay.
The current writer for Detective is I don't want to say that he's new, but I definitely haven't heard of him.
Oh, okay, I don't remember who it
but
is.
But he's doing a good job.
I really liked it a lot. Mm-hmm. And actually, the writing team of Williams and Blackman wrote this New 52 Batwoman for 26 issues, and at 26 they both resigned. Because of the fact that they were having creative differences with DC, mm-hmm. one of the major ones was that DC did not want to allow them to write Batwoman, write a marriage into the story for Batwoman.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very super upset about that and thought that it was the right way to go creatively with the character mm-hmm. and, in fact, had been planning on it for months. And at the last minute, DC said, no, we don't want that. Mm-hmm. And the writers do have come out and said that in defense of DC, they didn't get a feeling at all that it was homophobic creative decision-making or anything against Batwoman being gay or being married. But they were just the writers were just kind of fed up with the fact that DC was not allowing them to do creatively what they wanted with the character and also making last-minute changes where they were – in comic book writing, you plan a story arc like – way far ahead, and that's what they were doing. As last minute, DC would come in and have them change it, and so they mm-hmm. just did not want to continue that that working relationship anymore. So, but they were on the series for 26 issues.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a pretty good run.
So, what are we rating this, guys?
What are we rating? I love Batwoman. I'm going to go with 3 conchas, but they're no champarado for me because of those nipples.
Well, I'm going to go 3 conchas and champarado only because the artwork really stood out for me. Mm-hmm.
Nipples included?
You know what?
Those are the things that stood out the most.
You know what? I just look past that. I really, mm-hmm. the hair really the hair was a big part of this whole art. Like,
and you know, when I first read this, I was like so shocked to find that it was a wig.
Yeah,
me
a wig.
Too.
Yeah.
No, but I mean the hair, as far as like Llorona's hair, like the dynamic movement, and how like they use the hair as part of like a memory.
Yes, there was a panel in there that was awesome, like that.
And then the hair to show like movement. I don't know. I just love that. I love that how they used hair as part of like a storytelling medium within this story. And I was like, that's pretty damn good guy.
Yeah.
So for me, you know, and then the story itself was awesome. I mean, I love it when they include Batman in the background. Love that. And I just, the story was really well written for me, including a folklore story from Mexico that, you know, I grew up listening to is an extra added bonus. So for me, it's Three Conchas and Champurrado.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You know what? I was stuck. I was going to give it 2.5, but now that you mentioned, like, the hair and everything, I'm going to give it a 3 conchas, but no champurrado. She is right about the nipple thing. The nipple thing bugged me a lot, and basically the scene of Bette stripping,
mm-hmm.
and I was just like, yeah, that's not gonna do it for me. But also, now that I've read Detective Comics and I know there's just an equally as good storyline out there for her, that it's possible, like, that you can do more for it. And, like, not to downplay what J.H. Williams III and W. Hayden Blackman did, they did an excellent job with her, and I really do love this storyline. But, and it's good, but, yeah, the nipples. Those freaking nipples.
And speaking of Marguerite Bennett, definitely, if you are a Batwoman fan, check out Bombshells, because Batwoman, Kate Kane, is the Batwoman in Bombshells, and she is freaking amazing.
Side note, is that where they made a statuette of her in a baseball outfit?
Okay, cool. Yeah. It's arguably, she is the main character.
Uh-huh.
But it's definitely worth a read.
Yeah.
I very much like it. It's really good.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys. Well, pick that up if you guys are interested in this character. Really, really great reviews along the board. The storyline is really solid. Artwork's pretty good, except for nipples. But really, check it out, guys. Check it out. Tell us what you think. So what's on the radar, guys?
Okay, so this is Kristen, and on my radar this week is a couple of things. First off, I have been catching up on a lot of my reading that I'm behind, and one of the series that I caught up with last week was Occupy Avengers. And oh my gosh, I was so... Okay, so I don't know how many of you out there are reading any Marvel books, but Avengers has so many... Avengers and Avengers members have so many books that are out there right now that it's kind of hard to keep up. And this Occupy Avengers one was one that I was so close to just being like, okay, I haven't even started it yet. I'm just going to put it back on the shelf and, you know, I won't even know what I'm missing. But oh my gosh, I'm so happy that I didn't do that. Occupy Avengers is basically the story of Hawkeye after the whole Oops, I Killed Hulk, Bruce Banner Hulk, issue that happened over the summer. Mm-hmm. He teams up with Red Wolf.
Red Wolf!
And it is so amazing. Both of those characters are so great. They're basically going around and they're kind of like, what's the TV show or the movie that I want to... Basically, people hear on the street that there's these people that help out the downtrodden and the out of luck with things that are going on, and people go to them and say, hey, can you help me out? And so they're kind of like small-time vigilantes that go out and help people who are having problems. And they travel around, and Hawkeye is... he starts his journey by himself, and then he meets up with Red Wolf, and they deal with an issue together. And then Hawkeye basically says, hey, I'm going on this self-discovery journey. Do you want to come? And Red Wolf's like, sure, why not? And so they take off, and it's like, it's an awesome, like, buddy film in comic book form. That's the best way I can describe it.
It's a buddy kind of hero cop
yes,
comic.
Yes.
And I love it. I love Occupy Avengers. I love Hawkeye. I love Red Wolf. And it's just both of them together. Like, who would have thought?
Yeah.
Like, it's just, but it's so good. Yeah,
so that's on my radar. They are on issue 5 right now. Issue 5 came out, I think, last week or maybe 2 weeks ago, but they're coming super, super close to a trade. So if you haven't been reading the single issues, definitely keep that on your radar that a trade paperback will be coming out soon. Pick it up at your LCS or on Comixology. It is worth the read. I love it. I do have one quick other little thing on my radar, only because it's been out for a while now, and I just barely got to it, the Netflix original series 13 Reasons Why. I had no idea what this was about, and I started watching it yesterday, and I'm already on episode 10. There's 13 episodes. I'm not going to say too much about what it's about, except for the fact that it deals with issues, a lot of misogyny and sexual harassment. There is some sexual assault stuff going on, but it really deals in depth with how what it's like to be a female in high school, dealing with a lot of like just sexual unwanted attention. There's some depression. There's some suicide. The suicide awareness stuff going on too, but I definitely highly recommend this TV show for those issues. It's just a lot of awareness that if you have a child in high school, you are a high school student, I think that there's a lot that you could identify with, and I really, really appreciate all of the issues that they're dealing with that I think seem to be things that a lot of times get overlooked.
Absolutely. My God, my teen years were hellish. Like, I think about it and I'm like, I wouldn't want to relive that. I would like want to relive like after high school for sure.
I would go back to relive high school years as long as I could keep my adult
knowledge
with me. Yes, you know how I would rule that school.
Yeah. I would rule that school and be valedictorian.
Well, I don't know about that. I studied hard the first time. I don't want to do that again.
Well, I didn't, so yeah.
I could shoot for that.
All right, so on my radar, a few years ago, Brian Michael Bendis and Sara Pichelli did Spider-Man, which was a crossover of the then 616 Peter Parker meeting Ultimate Universe Miles Morales. So this was a crossover event, and it was the first time Peter Parker and Miles Morales ever met, and I absolutely love that book. It is great because bottom line, Mysterio develops a portal to the Ultimate Universe, and his plan is to like basically take over and like take over that universe because he wanted to be the number one bad guy, and he found out that Peter Parker was dead, and since Peter Parker was always messing up his plans in the regular universe, he was gonna go to another universe to basically rule it. And then
seems legit.
Yeah. And then Peter Parker found it, and then he crossed over, and then they met. And then he finds out that, oh, he died in this universe, and then he was just like, wait, how's Aunt May? And then he finds out that everybody was still in high school. He's just like, everybody's so small. Because and he meets Miles, and it was a very heartwarming story, and a very kind of like oh my God, like I can't believe all this stuff happened. Like I nearly dodged a bullet kind of thing. And but the main ending for that plotline was that when Peter Parker goes back to his universe, he searches up trying to look up who Miles is in his universe, and you would just end with a screen cap of him like going like, oh my God, he's in shock. It has just been announced that Spider-Man 2, again, Brian Michael Bendis and Sara Pichelli are going to be following that up. Right here, I have a link from Nerdist, and it says, who is the other Miles? So we're finally going to get a follow-up to the original Spider-Man.
That's super cool. I love Miles, and he's always, right now, he's jumping all over the different realities with Gwen. Mm-hmm. So that would definitely be super interesting to read. And was the original, was it a one-shot or it was a miniseries?
It was a miniseries. It was a five-issue miniseries, and Spider-Man 2 will also be a five-issue miniseries. And I'm not sure where it takes place continuity-wise, if it's out of universe, kind of like how Spider-Man now kind of is because of all the reboots and everything. Yeah. So I'm going to assume that's what they're doing, but I'm very excited for it. And I do, and I definitely recommend people pick up Spider-Man itself. It is one of my favorite comics.
And is it, I was just going to say, is it still in print?
Yes, it's still in print. We have a few copies at the store.
Okay.
And I'm definitely going to bug Eddie into ordering it.
Well, that sounds really cool because I always, wonder about that because when he goes to Spider-Gwen's reality, obviously Peter Parker dies, and that's how Spider-Gwen becomes Spider-Gwen. So, well, not how, but the reason she took his place. I always wondered. I had no idea that this other one existed. So the multiverse in Spider-Man, the Spider-Verse, is like so super confusing. Like there's so as if Barry Allen came from DC and came doing all kinds of crazy shit over here.
And there's like just a bunch of hims running around in different versions.
Yeah.
And the Spider-Verse storyline was very confusing, but it was so much fun because we got. That's where we got Spider-Gwen from, and I love Spider-Gwen. And that's where we got Silk, too.
Yes.
Uh-huh. So it's just a...
I love Silk. I'm growing to love Spider-Gwen. I love her more as outside of her title series. I love her in...
other books.
In other books. Yeah. But I love Silk. I love Spider-Gwen. I love Miles. I love... Spider Ham, and New actually
Spider UK shit,
and actually Web Warriors was really good. I really liked Web Warriors, and I'm sad to say that Peter Parker is my least favorite Spider-Man in all the books that I'm reading right now.
That's a bold statement. The clone conspiracy
was super, super boring.
When will Marvel learn to stop with the clones? Because it didn't work in the 90s, 80s, or whatever, and it's not working now. I mean, yeah, we got Scarlet Spider out of it, and I do like Scarlet Spider.
And we're coming up with a Scarlet Spider number one here pretty soon.
Yeah, I saw that cover. It's horrible.
Yeah.
Like, it's so weird. Like, it's so awkward. You just see him with a tiny grin, like, in his mask. It is the creepiest thing I've ever seen. I was just like, and it was just like, but I'm pretty sure, I don't know who the writer is. They will hopefully put some effort into it besides that.
Yeah, we just got a promo poster last week, and I didn't check to see who the writer was, but it's not Peter Parker, so I assume I'll love it. Which my husband, if he heard me say that, would be grounds for divorce. His favorite comic book run ever is the original Volume 1 Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man.
You know he's going to listen to this later, right? Never mind, cut that out, Sarah.
I will try. So what's your radar, Sarah?
On my radar is Josh Whedon. Of
Josh.
Why do I always Josh? I always do that?
J O S S.
I call him Josh.
It's Joss.
Josh.
He's Josh.
Joss Whedon. That's the only way it's gonna come out right. Joss Whedon is he's in negotiations to write, direct, and produce a Batgirl standalone movie from Warner Brothers, and it's. As you guys know, he did the Age of Ultron for Avengers, and
isn't that the movie everyone hates?
Well, and, you mentioned it, but he did bring us Firefly and Buffy the Vampire Slayer,
and the original Avengers movie.
There you go. There you go. So I'm very excited that you know what, and that's what I love about comic book fans is that they don't. I mean, sure, they'll have their favorite, like, I can be DC girl, and, you know, other people can be Marvel people or Image, but he's just so knowledgeable about comic books in general and characters that I feel that he would do a great job on the Batgirl movie, standalone movie, so even if it's DC, and he's primarily known for his Marvel work, I'm very excited. If he takes this on, I think I would be, like, number one in line.
So it's not, because I know I had shared something on the
Comadres y Comics Facebook page a while back, and I was under the assumption that it was already set in stone, but it's not. He's just in negotiations.
As far as I've read so far, it's negotiations, okay. But I could be wrong. Okay. And in that case, then yes, he's doing it.
No, I don't remember. I read the article, but at this point in time, I don't remember what it said.
Exactly. So I'm under the impression that he's leaning more towards a yes.
Gotcha.
But it could be that he has already agreed to it. Mm-hmm. But I'm just happy that he's even looking at it, mm-hmm. to be honest. Mm-hmm. I mean, the JLA trailer just did not give me the feels like Star Wars, Last Jedi, or like Thor.
Oh my God.
Right? I know him from work. You know, stuff like that. Even, you know, Guardians of the Galaxies. I mean, everything just got me all riled up. And then to get, being a DC girl and getting this JLA trailer was like, even Atomic Blonde. With Charlize Theron, I think she's kind of a British secret agent, was more amazing than the JLA trailer. And I'm like,
whoa, savvy.
I know, right? And I'm just like, I hate to admit it, but I, you know, I'm just going to watch it for, you know, just to say that I did. But I'm not really looking forward to it. So for me to hear that he's in negotiations, El Joe Sweden, I'm really excited. I'm really excited. I'm going to say it. I'm super excited. And hopefully they say yes, and hopefully they can come to an agreement, because I want to be happy about DC movies again. I really do.
Well, it's which Batgirl are we talking about?
Barbara Gordon.
Okay.
No, I don't know. I'm just saying.
The cover they've been using is Barbara Gordon. Uh-huh. And if it happens, I'll watch it.
Yeah.
But I'm keeping my reservation. I've been dying. I've been dying for a Batgirl anything for so long, because I love Batgirl. I love Barbara Gordon. I like Stephanie Brown and Cassandra Cain, too,
Cassandra's
as the Batgirls.
Awesome, dude.
Cassandra, I love Cassandra so much.
She's so cool.
But Babs was it.
Yeah.
She was, like, number one from Batman the Animated Series. Her and Nightwing, original OTP,
yes.
Man.
That's
like,
right.
I know they just did the Teen Titans movie with him and Corey, and they're, like, they're in a relationship and everything, and I'm just, like, always, like, no, you're meant to be with Babs.
Right?
Yeah, like, Nightwing and Oracle fuck me up every time. Yeah.
I know.
But,
the only Convergence book that was worth reading.
Yes, definitely. It was the only one that was written by Gail Simone. Of course it was going to be good. But, he has a long repertoire of, like, you know, Firefly, Serenity, Buffy.
Absolutely.
Like, he's Josh...
Joss
Whedon is the man. He's the king of the nerds.
Absolutely.
But, like, Age of Ultron.
I don't know. It's him and Kevin Smith. They're neck and neck.
They're neck to neck.
Yeah.
But like Age of Ultron, and he himself, how he's been kind of like his attitude towards like nerd culture and stuff. It's been kind of like, dude, are you okay? Do you need a break? maybe you need a bit of a longer break. And I kind of was like, maybe a woman should direct it.
You know what? And that's what we were talking about earlier. And maybe, you know, it would be nice for him to, like, champion a woman director and stand behind her. That would be so cool.
At least get a woman script writer. Like,
right.
Just kind of like, who's going to make this story?
Yeah.
Like, please, like... I just want it to be good.
And then, you know, if we wait long enough, we can have X-23 play Barbara Gordon. That would be cool.
That would be interesting.
Definitely. We just keep her in our comic book world for now. Like, just make up roles for her. Definitely. So that's what's on my radar, guys. I think that brings our episode to an end. Or do you guys have any shout-outs?
Shout out to Comadres y Comics on Instagram, and also a shout out to the East LA Expo, which is going to be the first comic convention in East LA to happen on May 20th, which is a Saturday. It's going to happen in the El Gallo Plaza, which is in San Gabriel. It's at I don't have the address, but if you can find them on Facebook at East LA Expo. That's their page, and if you're familiar at all with East LA, you probably know where El Gallo Plaza is. It's on, I think we said that it was, oh, actually, it's not in San Gabriel. Nostalgic Books and Comics, the people who are sponsoring the East LA Expo, is in San Gabriel. But the El Gallo Plaza is, I think, on, did I see?
It's on
Cesar Chavez Boulevard, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, 4545 Cesar Chavez. I wrote that down somewhere.
We'll post the address on our Facebook.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. It's 4545 East Cesar Cesar E. Chavez. Sorry, guys. I'm having a mental breakdown with Spanish and English. But yes, and oh my God, guys, did you guys hear who's going to be a guest
yes!
at East LA Comic Con?
Who's going to be there?
It's going to be us.
Yes.
Comadres y Comics.
Comadres
gonna
y
be
Comics.
If you guys want to meet us, come on down. And as far as I've heard, the event is free.
Yes.
So. Yeah.
So if you guys can make it, come on down to our table. We're going to be doing giveaways.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're going to do raffles.
Yeah.
And we're also going to sign autographs if you guys want one.
And a kissing booth.
A kissing booth. Yes.
I'll participate, but I'm going to be picky because, you know.
And also, what else are we going to do? We are going to maybe, hopefully, record an episode at the convention.
Oh, yes. We're going to try to get our technology up to par so that we can do that.
Absolutely, guys. Absolutely. And if you want to stop by, say hi. Maybe you could be in our episode. It'd be so great. That'd be super cool, guys. So check us out. Come on down. Hit us up.
And what are some shout-outs for you, Jen?
Hit us up on Twitter with any questions or recommendations or just to yell at us for our opinions. At Comic Comadres on Twitter.
Excellent. Well, we still haven't reviewed any of the reviews on iTunes yet, but you still have time. Because I posted the episode late, so please.
We're going to extend it a little
bit. We're extending it. We're extending a grand prize on our iTunes review, so please do that, and we will probably review it at the end. I'm going to say the end of May, only because we're going to go to the convention.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
In case anybody at the convention likes us and is on our, you know, episode interview / you know, podcast at the convention and wants to review our iTunes account, then they'll be able to win the grand prize as well.
Mm-hmm. And also, we're talking about the East LA Expo on May 20th, but also Free Comic Book Day is May 6th. And Comadres y Comics is going to have a table at Heidi Hill Comic Con as well.
Exactly, guys. So you have two opportunities to mingle with us, the cool kids. You can sit with us, just so you know. And it's okay if you don't wear pink. So, look up that information on Facebook. There's going to be prizes for all sorts of things like cosplaying and so forth, raffles and stuff like that. So it's going to be a lot of fun. It's for all the family, bring the kids, you can even bring pets, right?
We're pet friendly.
They love dogs. It's going to be great. So come on down, get ready for that, mentally prepare. I have a shout out to four other podcasts that record here in the studio. Mustache Cash Dash, Mint Condition Comic Connoisseurs, We Were Promised Crowns, and I want to do a special shout-out to I Love Comic Book Stuff. There are a group on Facebook that I joined, and we are reviewing Watchmen, which was a real pleasant surprise because reading the book, I realized that the movie hit pretty damn close to the book. So that was really awesome for somebody to take on a movie and actually try to mirror the comic book almost to the T, and that takes a lot of work and a lot of guts.
Zack Snyder's only successful movie. Oh, yeah, I went there.
I saw that movie, and oh, what the heck was going on. I started reading Watchmen, but I haven't finished it because I started reading it at Comic-Con last year, so, you know.
Oh.
Didn't get much reading done, but
more.
It's on my list of things to do. I have the copy sitting right by my bed, but I saw the movie and I was like, "Am I on drugs?" I you know what? And that's so weird. I actually loved it, and I totally love the book. They have these, you know how you were talking about those inserts that the new Bitch Planet is gonna have the manual.
Uh huh.
Well, there are inserts within the comic book as well.
Yes,
there
which was lots of words. I saw that.
Super informative. It just brought a whole new different aspect of the.
My gosh, that's funny because I remember asking my husband. These pages, am I supposed to read these?
I can't remember what his long answer was, but the short answer was basically not really, so I didn't.
No. Oh man, we're gonna have to care about Watchmen real soon because there's gonna be the button event.
Yeah, the button event
for Batman. It starts this week. God damn, I have to read Watchmen in a week.
You got two days. Dude, it takes me like forever to read like three chapters.
Watchmen is very okay. So, and this is also why I didn't finish watching it. I know we're already on the radar, but I got some stuff to say about Watchmen.
Go ahead. Spill that tea.
Okay, so Watchmen is like the quintessential like the it was. Rafiki holding up Simba in The Lion King. Like, this is like the King of the Nerds holding up this book off the ledge and all of the tundra to see. And
so, I can't. Why can I see that? I can see that. I can. Oh my god.
We gotta make a beam, guys. We gotta make a beam.
I can imagine Junior holding up that book.
We're gonna make a meme. That's all there is.
And so when I was reading it, I was like so super like nervous, like what am I can't miss anything. I can't miss anything. And like and I was like reading it and I would like read one page like three times. I was like, okay, wait. Am I understanding it? Okay, turn page. And like doing the same with the next page. And it was like so stressful and overwhelming, which is the reason why I didn't keep reading, because I was like, there was too much going on. And we were staying in a house with a whole bunch of friends and it was Comic-Con. And I would read it at night when I would come back from the. And it was just, I couldn't put my attention to it the way that I wanted to, and I was like so like stressed out that I was gonna miss something because I felt like, and then everyone's like, oh my god, it's so wonderful and it's so great, and I'm like, okay, I gotta love this book. This like my expectations are so high.
Yeah.
And so I haven't gone back to it because I'm just so worried I'm not gonna do it right.
I just want to know why everyone freaking nuts themselves whenever you mention Dr. Manhattan or Rorschach. They just like, it's just, they're like, oh.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm just like, calm the fuck down. What is it about these dudes? I haven't read Watchmen.
But I
at
mean,
all.
If we tackled Maggie the Mechanic, that was some dense shit there.
Oh, hey, yeah. But it was enjoyable.
We could do Watchmen, so maybe that's something we could. There's no female writers. There's female characters, but I mean, it's definitely, like I said, it's the quintessential comic nerd book to read for sure.
You know what? I went into this not thinking that. I mean, I knew it was very important, but maybe that's why I'm so lax about reading it, and I'm able to, like, really suck everything in. And I'm loving the heck out of it. I love the inserts. I really love the inserts. I'm just like, this stuff is really, like, it really mirrors the story. And then, I really want to go and talk about this with you guys, but... I'm gonna let you guys read it first. Definitely. I mean, I'm not gonna be like, oh, the nerdo that's like, I nut myself when I talk about this. I'm trying hard to not, you know, be that person. But it's up there, dude. It's really up there.
Yeah, I mean, my husband, all the other comic geekies that I work with at the shop who read
who read comics and have been reading them for a while, I mean, they just cannot tell me enough about how good amazing this book is. Yeah.
It really is. For me, I'm really loving this.
Mm-hmm. I'm hoping it's like a Swamp Man thing where I was just like, I don't know. But then I ended up being like, oh, my God.
Yeah. This is amazing. Actually, same. And one of the guys who recommends it is one that recommends things that are just so, like, dense and intense and everything. And that's what I'm fearing. And a little weird. And that's what I'm fearing. And so I just, I'll have to take out some time to put to reading it again, but for sure we need to make that meme.
you know, for me, like I always say, I like a little vertigo in my comic book reading.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't even think this title was even labeled Vertigo. I know it's a DC publisher.
It was Vertigo.
But it was Vertigo? Okay.
They're not using Vertigo anymore. They're using the DC Comics labeled for the new reprint.
Yeah, but the publication for this was in 1987. Maybe, because I got the trade paperback, so maybe they don't put it on there. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
But it's so
Vertigo for me. I'm like, oh, my God, yes, it's been so long, Vertigo, yes. I love you.
A little comic drama, but I think this was the book that cemented Alan Moore never writing for DC anymore.
Really?
Because, Alan Moore created this, and it was, like, his, but then, I guess the relationship between him and DC soured, and they didn't allow him to keep the creator rights to it. And it's permanently, like, a DC franchise thing now, and that's why they can use it without Alan Moore's permission anymore, because a lot of, like, now, you know, like, Vertigo, it was an indie publisher before DC bought it, and that's why they were able to keep those rights.
Interesting.
Little comic drama.
No, that's... Yeah. I love comic drama sometimes.
The same thing happened with Miracle Man and Marvel,
mm-hmm.
and that's why Alan Moore was just all like, fuck the big two.
Yeah, wow.
he only does his, like, weird indie shit now.
He is quite a character, Mr. Moore.
Yeah.
But yeah, shout out to those guys over at I Love Comic Book Stuff. They're
I was like, how did we get here? Yeah.
They invited me into their group. They don't even know me. I don't know them, but you know, like, we share a love for comics. So, I mean, share the love, guys. There's a lot of groups out there. There's a lot of what are the blogs and so forth. Mm-hmm. You just reach out and touch someone.
It definitely made the political season much more tolerable for me, because I'm just a member of so many different comic related groups on Facebook that's mostly what I would see coming up on my Facebook feed, is all the comic book related articles and little videos and stuff. And I love getting on there and talking about comics with people I don't know.
Exactly. All right, guys. Well, that brings us to the end of our episode. Thank you guys for listening. We have been your host. I am Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jennifer.
Bye, guys.
Ciao.
Bye.
Bye.
La luna es una mujer llorona, y por eso el sol de España. La luna es una mujer llorona, y por eso el sol de España. Anda que bebe los
sabe de amores llorona, no sabe lo que es martirio. Soñaba dormida, llorona, dormida.
¿Dónde estabas, quieta?
Yo te soñaba dormida, llorona, dormida.
¿Dónde estabas, quieta?
Pero en llegando el olvido, llorona, soñé que estabas despierta. Pero en llegando el olvido, llorona, soñé que estabas despierta. Sí, porque te quiero, quieres, llorona, quieres que te quiera más. Sí, porque te quiero, quieres, llorona.